Thank you, Steve Bertrand.
Hi, everybody. Were you burping that?
No, I said thank you, Steve Bertrand.
Oh.
And I thank you, Bill, for thanking me.
You're welcome.
Thank you
both.
Thank
you. Hi, everybody. We're the most thankful show on radio, Bill and Wendy. Welcome aboard, 312-981-7200. If you'd like to talk to us, you can call us there. You can text us there.
When will the hate stop?
Oh, that's a good question.
I really thought Facebook would get back to normal. Go back to taking pictures of your dog and your food. And
right.
All of a sudden, I miss that.
Please, yes. I'll watch a cat video. Just stop.
Exactly.
There have been very few cat videos or pictures of people's mac and cheese the last couple of weeks.
And haven't you missed it? Don't you want it back? Put it that way.
I never thought I'd say this. Yeah. I want to see a cat wearing a little fire chief helmet.
Why does the hate still keep coming?
It's not going to stop anytime soon.
But it has to stop. Listen, you know, I know yesterday I said Hope was my middle name, and I
checked. By the way, I want to see your birth certificate, because I don't believe you.
You birther.
Liar. You're a liar.
I'm going to change it legally.
You're the puppet.
You're the puppet.
All right, I'm the puppet. I am the puppet now. My vote didn't matter.
But you can't look at it that way, because that's the worst way to look at it, because it... Everybody's vote matters, but nobody's vote matters. There's never been a presidential election that's been decided by one vote, so...
It was pretty darn close, not one vote.
Right, but...
Not electorally, which I want to find out more about that. We're in the process of finding someone to say when that originated, why it originated. I know the gist of it, but is there any way to get rid of it? How come both times it was the Democrats that had issues, Al Gore, Hillary Clinton?
Right.
How come every other time it matched up?
I don't know the answer. You're a very inquisitive young lady.
I'm curious, Wendy.
I'm the man in the big yellow hat.
Yes, you are.
All right. I don't know the answer to why it started or how it started, but we had a caller yesterday. I thought about this a lot yesterday because there's nothing else to think about.
I know.
So here's what I thought about. We had a caller on yesterday. His name escapes me. I don't remember his name. But he said that what this election proved to him was that everybody's
Cameron,
vote.
His name was,
Cameron.
I think
it was Cameron. Was that everybody's vote truly is equal, and he used the Electoral College as an example of why he believes that, is that whether you're a very rich person or a poor person, that this election showed him that everybody's vote was equal. And I said, but really, it would be more equal if one vote equaled one vote. No Electoral College, popular vote, that's what it should be. If more people want one candidate than the other, that should be the winner. But he didn't agree with me on that. But I don't know how to better illustrate that point.
That's why we need to get to the bottom of this.
Why the Electoral College?
Because the times have changed. Well, they may go back.
I thought they did until a few days ago.
Oh, and I want to talk about the protest too, because that's what's getting hated upon a lot on Facebook. Like, oh, you crybaby whiners.
Accept the victory. It happened. Right. I read that 1,000 times yesterday. But I understand. I always say this about protests. It really doesn't. Sadly, you can protest all you want.
It really doesn't change anything.
Nobody's going to look at it again and go, wow, people are really unhappy. We should really redo this election. That's not going to happen. But by the same token, I appreciated them out there saying we're not happy with the way things ended up.
Because we have a microphone to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. Yeah. And if we get one more text about, you know, you guys are not supposed to be biased, we're allowed to be
biased.
Yes, we can say whatever we wanted. And I still have hope, but it's like a bunch of mixed emotions. Like when the election results were unfolding, And not what I expected. And when he was declared the winner, my first thought was, I'm embarrassed to be an American right now. I mm-hmm. really am. I'm mad. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, but it's done. There's nothing I can do. I can wallow in it. I mean, you know, I am not an alcoholic. I know there are a lot of members of AA out there. It's one day at a time. I mean, what else can you do?
That's it.
I can't live in fear and be fretful. And we're all in this together. So I'm hoping against hope. Again, Hope, my new middle name. I will legally change it later.
Right.
I don't know what else to do.
I don't know what you can do, but everything you just said, that's kind of what you have to do, is let it play out and see. And so many people said kind of versions of what I said yesterday, is that I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. I hope he comes in here and makes the country great again, quote unquote. I hope that happens.
I hope he makes it better.
I've thought it's been great. For me, it's been pretty great.
And for a lot of people, it hasn't, and I understand that's why they voted. I really do.
But you know what? So many people said on election night and then in the analysis yesterday that a lot of America hasn't quite caught up to where they were. You know, we had some pretty rough years. Yeah, we had some pretty rough years, and there's a lot of parts of the country that really hasn't caught up. People who are either not working or working extremely low minimum job jobs, what they're saying is, help us. We need help and stuff like that. There have been times I've been out of work, and sometimes for a very long time, much longer than I was comfortable with. There was never a second where I blamed the fact that I was out of work on who was sitting in the presidential chair, ever. You have to adapt. A lot of the jobs that are lost, sure, there's plenty of jobs that are lost because they're in other countries. But more than that, just the fact that we've progressed, and sadly, there's a lot of computers doing jobs that people used to do. So at some point, you have to say to yourself, okay, I was really good at doing this job, but that job just doesn't seem to exist anymore. So I have to find a different kind of job if I want to survive.
You do have to adapt. You never once said thanks, Obama?
I never once, no matter who was sitting in the Oval Office, I never went, boy, if that guy wasn't the president, I'd be working right now.
Are you going to say thanks, Trump?
I'm not. I don't think I'll thank him for too many things. I don't think.
Well, again, all we have is hope. And the protesters, it's like I kept going back and forth. Like, they have a right to say they're unhappy with the decision. It's a constitutional right to protest.
Sure.
It was peaceful, Steve, wasn't it? I mean, other than Short Drive being blocked off.
Right. There were five arrests. So,
but, I mean, they have a right to say, hey, I'm not happy. I didn't vote for this person. And, again, we have a microphone. So,
right.
They should have been protesting, though, in Sheboygan. Not at Trump Tower, right? If they're, or maybe they should have gone to Sheboygan to try to understand the rural voter.
That's a
who
better
voted
move. Right, right.
Yeah, but there's no Trump Tower there yet. It'll be all sausages.
Right. They're going to connect all the Trump Towers.
All right. We had Adam on, remember, from Adam Ruins Everything. And Jim, you saw Adam ruined everything by explaining the Electoral College.
Yes. And I wish I could remember it all, but it sort of makes you not even want to vote, you know. Because if you look, I believe Hillary won the popular vote.
Yes, she did.
Because of the Electoral College. And so did Al Gore.
I know. And shouldn't they match up? I mean, they've matched up every single other time.
What? I mean, I understand the premise of it because you got like six people that live in Wyoming, you know. And then you got like 8 million people that live just in the Chicago area. So if you want to make it where everybody has an equal voice, you know, why should the six sheep farmers in Wyoming, you know, not have a voice?
But then their vote would totally matter.
It should be majority rules.
Yeah.
It should be.
You know what? I believe 100% that it should be majority rule. But the bottom line is this. As long as you got money in politics, it's never gonna happen. As long as you got people like big oil or big unions or any other special interest spending not hundreds but millions of dollars in a election, you're never going to have majority rule. You're going to have an oligarchy is what we got now. We do not have a democracy in this country. What we have is whoever spends the most, whoever is in power gets the money and runs with it.
All right, but I want to get back to the Electoral College, and I don't know
that's part of the problem.
That's why it was set up, you're saying, right?
I do know that it was set up because, you know, and Steve, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but just all this reading I've been doing lately. So if there was a candidate that people didn't really approve of, it was kind of like a fail-safe method to keep this election on track.
Yeah.
But did it work in reverse this time? I don't know. And would I be as upset if Trump won the popular vote as well as the Electoral College? It's still not the man I voted for, but it would be a little easier for me to digest, I think.
Right, because then you just say point blank, the guy with the most votes won.
Yeah,
okay,
the public spoke. Hey, Jim, we got to run, but thank you very much. We'll take a quick break, and then Brian wants to chime in with more Electoral College. Do you say electoral or electoral? Or do you vary? Because my mileage may vary.
Yeah, I think whatever if I'm in the mood for. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more discussion to be had. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and we're discussing the election that took place on Tuesday.
I thought you were going to say we're disgusted.
We're disgusted about the election that took place on Tuesday to some extent. 312-981-7200 if you know some stuff.
We were talking about the Electoral College, and Brian, jump in, will you?
Hi, Bill and Wendy. Let me just first say that I had actually turned 720 ticket off my presets about a month ago because the bias was so unbridled and just so ridiculous. And I said, I'll get you guys back on after the election because I really love listening to Steve. I love listening to you guys and Ro Khan. And it was just a shame. But let me tell you about the Electoral College real quick.
All right.
Okay? Are you back to stay, Brian?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, all right, good. Welcome back.
I had to turn you off. So listen, we are a democratic republic, okay? So what happens is each state, okay, the voters in each state vote to decide who they are going to send as delegates to vote for the president of the United States.
Right.
We have 50 sovereign states, okay?
Yeah.
The reason that this was set up this way, okay, is so that each state got representation because if you don't do it this way, the country is in danger of being ruled by just the urban, large urban population centers, L.A., Chicago, New York, et cetera.
Right.
It'll actually be decided by those three states, okay?
So all right, that makes sense.
Set up that way. Now, let me answer one of Wendy's questions, which was, why is it always happening to the Democrats? Well, I'll tell you why. Because if you look at the vote totals in California, Illinois, and New York, they are so way over the top for Democrats every time. That's why it's almost impossible for Republicans to win the popular vote, okay? That's what happens. There's not enough population in those other states to do that. Now, you realize, of course, that as California, New York, and Illinois, they all get an enormous number of electoral votes to send to the Electoral College because of their population.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll leave you with this one last thing, Wendy, especially, is that because you seem to be the most upset about it, and I don't want you to be. I want you to really understand how it works, right? So take a look when you get a chance, and this is the thing that always is so telling. Take a look at an electoral map or an election map of the whole country by county, red and blue, right? And what you'll see is the entire country is red, the entire country when you go county by county, except for little blue spaces around the urban centers. And this year there's a pretty significant blue space just above the line between California and Mexico. There's a pretty significant blue spot there.
Is it a wall?
Okay, but otherwise, it's all in the urban. No, that's not what I'm saying. But it's all about the well. Anyway, I think I've explained it enough. But take a look at that map, and you'll understand why that this was not a win of the popular vote per se, they missed the will of the country. They actually did not. Take a look at that map.
I'm looking at the map, and I looked at it that night, and it is mostly red. But here's my question to you. Are you an attorney, or why do you know so much about the Electoral College, and thank you for knowing it?
Well, here, I am just some poor schmuck, poor working schmuck, and I just love American history, and I read a lot of books on American history. My favorite author, by the way, and I tell everybody, David McCullough, if you read his books, they are fantastic. They are absolutely fantastic, and I read a lot on American history. And you know what? Honestly, I'm 57 years old, and they taught this stuff in school when I was younger, you know, and I pay attention.
Well, and you should have. I should have paid more attention. So let me ask you this,
well,
Brian.
You know what?
How are electorates chosen? Is it through, like, Congress members? Is it senators? How are they chosen? And because
the actual delegates that go cast the vote.
Yes, because my question now is with the Republicans having control of the House and the Senate, does that mean that Republicans are pretty much always going to have the say now in the Electoral College, at least for quite some time?
No.
Or is there no connection?
No connection at all. None whatsoever. The each state, you know, they choose their delegates in each state. And then, as an example, I don't even know how many delegates Illinois has, but those people are already chosen, and their duty is to go down and cast those votes. It's kind of a pointless position, really. You don't really need people to do it, but they still have people doing it for. You know, I'm sure we know the reason for that, right? But yeah, it's just it really just numbers, and nobody is going to go to the to the Electoral College and cast a vote for a different candidate than who they were told to go vote for.
Although I read some guy had posted something up on the internet, and I'm looking for it now, who said he is required to go with what the rest of the state is doing. He's an electoral voter, and he said he's not.
Yeah, he has to. That's all smoke and mirrors. He absolutely has to.
But in some states you don't, right? Like, isn't Maine one that you can separate? There's a couple of states where they were saying they split the electoral votes.
Correct. In some states, and I think you're right, Maine is one. I'm not saying I'm an expert on all states, but I'm pretty sure that Maine is one where they don't vote statewide.
It's Maine and Nebraska.
I think Maine has four, and they went three Republican, one Democrat, I believe.
Yeah, so they can have different districts with, you know, do it that way. That's the state's choice. I mean, it's up to the state. That's why it's a sovereign state. They can do whatever they want to with regard to that, right? But most states say, you know, the majority rules. And listen, an example of the problem with not having electoral college is you ask people in Illinois outside of the city of Chicago if they feel like they're being represented by their Congress, and they'll say no.
Overwhelmingly,
right.
They feel like Chicago has all the power.
Right, like Chicago
and
is...
They're right about it to some extent.
In control of all of Illinois.
Well, anyway, we don't need to debate that. I get where you're going with that, but you understand that people deserve representation, and you cannot let this country just get ruled by three urban population centers. Because, by the way, it would be so easy if that were the case for one party to just go ahead and, you know, take over the entire country. So everybody just needs to sort of calm down a little bit. I mean, what I posted on Facebook, Wendy, was if anybody is afraid of a Trump presidency, or if they're afraid of a Hillary presidency, they don't. I mean, I'm talking about afraid. Then they don't really understand how this country works. We have three branches of government.
Right. It's not just one person calling all the shots. I get that.
And then the bottom line is that there are, if you look at the mean in the Congress, there are more moderates than anything. And the moderates in Congress from both parties will not allow a president to go off the rails. They just won't. I mean, they did it to Obama. The moderates in the Democratic Party had to control Obama to a certain extent, allowing him to do some things and not do some other things that they thought were just, you know, over the top, far left wing. And they're not going to let Trump do anything like that. We've already seen the establishment come out against Trump. They're not going to let him run crazy. So everybody seems to calm down. You know, our system of government works. We have a constitution. We have a great system of government. It's going to work just fine.
With a guy who doesn't know what he's doing. And, you know, if he does, okay. I we're all in this together. If not, then I'm voting for Kanye in 4 years.
Okay. That's fair.
Thank you, Brian, for all the info.
The guy not knowing what he's doing. Right. The last thing I'll tell you about not knowing what he's doing.
You have 10 seconds here, buddy. We got to run.
I'll do that. I'll say this. Obama didn't know what he was doing either. I would say that the 70-year-old man with worldly experience in business probably knows more than the community organizer.
Everybody That's your opinion. That's your opinion.
Well, I'm just saying.
And we're all entitled to it. And welcome back. I hope you'll stay.
Have a great day.
Thanks,
Brian.
Day, man. All right, let's do this. A quick break, some news, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I forgot we had to go on the air if you want to know the truth, Bill.
Wendy, we have to go on the air. It's a mandate. And joining us on the air is John Heffron.
Your mandate.
He's my mandate.
For the day.
We're going to prom together, John Heffron and myself. Actor, writer, producer, comedian, appearing at the Chicago Improv tonight through Sunday. Did you know about this, John? You're appearing at the Chicago Improv.
I didn't know I was an actor, writer, producer.
It says right here on the sheet.
That's
you must be.
Lie.
I saw you in Shakespeare years ago. You were very enjoyable.
I was in that. There's a John Heffron actor that sometimes they'll do a radio show and they'll bring up his acting credits.
Yeah. Oh.
And I never know. Like, because I used to do radio. I don't want to make the radio guy sound bad.
Right, sure. You play along.
So I go, oh, yeah. And there's like Gettysburg. There's this movie called Gettysburg. And they always ask me about Gettysburg. They're like, well, so how was Gettysburg? And I go, oh, you know.
Those Civil War thing,
and they always go, yeah, we watched it knowing you were going to come in here.
Those people clearly don't do their homework.
It's the, yeah, so I don't, you know, so it's kind of, but I'll take it. It's nice to be back here.
Tell us about Gettysburg.
And well, Gettysburg.
You were in Gettysburg years ago.
It's one of my favorite malls. They're one of the only malls that still has a structure. They have a structure in county seats still.
All the big county seats.
And merry-go-round.
Orange Bowl?
Yeah. Now, yeah.
Is that you go. Get,
best you pizza ever.
You get a little thing. So, but it's nice to be back. You know, I used to live in Chicago.
I know you did.
At Armitage in Sheffield, right above Kincaid's Bar.
Yeah.
Is where I used to live.
In the days you lived here, there was a lot of hope that one day the Cubs would win the World Series. And did you read it happened?
It was?
They won the World Series.
I have not, don't spoil alert, I have not watched any television or news in the last week. So I don't know what's going on at all. So I got to see who the won Cubs. The, and then.
The election.
I'm on the, like, the. I'm about halfway through the Republican primaries.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
So, yeah. The guy who put all the bridge and stuff, who...
Chris Christie?
Yeah, that guy's out. That's out. What I'm on.
You're caught up to that.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm caught up to there.
So, were you a Cubs fan when you were
good?
Here?
It was the thing. You know what? I lived in Chicago for maybe 5 or 6 years-ish. Maybe a little bit more. But I was never here.
Yeah.
You know, but plus I'm a Detroit guy, so it was always hard just to give up. But you know, went to games and stuff. So to say,
I
could cowtown and go, I was a huge fan. I kind of lived there, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm a Chicago guy now.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know how to handle that, if that makes any sense.
But it's kind of in your roots, because my grandfather always watched the White Sox, so I was just always a Sox fan.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, I was from Detroit originally, so even being in Los Angeles, we got a new football team. I'm like, well, okay, now technically I can have two football teams.
We need a new football team.
Yeah, even O-Lions, I never really had a football team, so it's good. I do have a lot of questions. Oh, last time I was here, that statue that's out front.
Oh, that just happened, what, last week,
it's,
though?
For those you can't, it's from what I saw, it's Abraham Lincoln, and he's pointing. He's got his hat off, and he's pointing. He's just pointing down the street. It's a huge Abraham Lincoln. But what's odd is, I don't know who that is next, because it was a quick car ride.
No one does.
He's standing next to a guy from the 80s.
Yes.
The guy's wearing like a Cosby
sweater
vest, and he's dressed like... Yeah, he's like the dad if it was 1988.
It is your 1980s everyman, I guess, kind
of
every dad.
He's supposed to be Frederick Douglass, but I don't think they did a very good job of Frederick Douglass.
But he's dressed in
he's wearing khakis from a few years ago.
And then he's dressed at like the sweater if you stay at a nicer hotel, how they sell clothes in the gift shop with the
a cable
hotel.
Net.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Abe Lincoln is kind of showing him directions.
He's pointing. I think the guy is like, hey, I'm lost. I'm from the 80s.
Yeah.
Do you know how I can find the 2016?
That's funny. I'm from the 1600s or 1800s.
Yeah, but the guy's got a hat that has like this snap with the little dots on it.
It's a strange statue.
Like, I don't, like, I would get if it's maybe a current.
Right.
Maybe a skinny suit, you know, the suits that I just.
Yeah. No, I don't know what they were going for there.
That guy lives in a retirement community and has a golf cart, and he drives to the rec center where he plays bridge with people.
That doesn't look that old. God, when do you go into a
I put a lot of thought into that guy in a 5 second drive.
A lot.
That's why I'm trying to get. I'm going to become
Do you know what used to be there, John?
What used to be there? That used to be there was a building.
It was a dice.
It was a big Rubik's cube.
No,
that'd be cool.
It was a kerplunk. It was Jenga.
Kerplunk was so fun.
It was the largest Jenga game in the history of
statue of Marilyn Monroe. And it was her from, you know, the movie where the wind blows her dress up?
Yeah.
From the transom?
Yeah.
It blows her dress up. So you would see guys from all over the world, businessmen from Asia and Europe and stuff, come to Chicago and then just look under her dress.
You they did that too.
I did it myself.
But see, that would make, okay, so if I saw Marilyn Monroe with her dress going up right there, that would go, I get that statue.
7 Year Itch, is that the movie I'm thinking it's from?
I think it is.
Hot Summer or something? No. But.
No.
The guy talking to Abe. Now, if we take that same Marilyn Monroe statue, put a guy in like an 80s Run DMC tracksuit,
right,
pointing someplace to Marilyn Monroe. That's as much sense as that as this one makes.
We have no control.
Put a guy in like a Saturday Night Fever outfit,
right,
talking to Marilyn Monroe.
Then you got something. That would stimulate tourism.
Can I tell you what was really exciting?
I hope it's not somebody who, like, some famous, like, I don't...
No, it's a dude.
It's just a guy.
I thought it was Lou Malnati, quite honestly,
at first. The pizza magnate.
But he would have dressed better and had an apron on.
Yes.
But Bill and I thought it was so exciting to see that guy. Remember, he was on a flatbed. Bill pointed it out. He was going down Michigan Avenue. The dude, not Abe Lincoln.
Lying on his back.
It was really weird to see him go by.
Yeah.
We're like, what is that? And then,
are they opening a Brooks Brothers around here?
But you know what? It shows how jaded people get to the absurd, because I'm in awe watching this thing go down the street, and I call Wendy, and we're looking at it. And other people, hundreds of people on the road, just let it happen. They just let it drive past without even questioning.
Without
it.
Even noticing. Right. They had a big Abe Lincoln without a hat on, right. Keep in mind.
Right.
One of those days.
Everybody accepted it. Very accepting people.
Well, good luck. I mean, it's obviously drawing a lot of tourists.
Sure.
Can I
be
tell
fun.
You, Marilyn Monroe was kind of wearing granny panties under that? I never realized that till just now.
Yeah.
When the subway grate and the wind blew up.
Well, when that movie was made.
I guess they
weren't
wearing
provocative underwear. No, that's what the ladies wore back then.
No, but if you look, I mean, if you were to lift up her skirt a little more, it says Juicy on the back.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, she was the first one to ever wear lettering on her butt.
Pink.
Yeah.
An innovator was that Marilyn Monroe.
And then Juicy.
Yeah. John Heffern is here. If you can guess what he has written on his underwear, you can win tickets to see him at the Chicago Improv. Chicago.improv.com. Go to his own website. That's johnheffern.com. Back with more next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. John Heffern is here. He says he's not an actor or a writer or producer, but I know for a fact he's a comedian because I've seen you do the comedy and people love you.
So I guess you do write. You know, you do comedy.
You have to write your material, sure.
An actor, I mean, I was in Sabrina, Teenage Witch.
Oh, listen to you, name dropper.
Especially, yeah, so I was in that. So, I mean, technically, I played a vampire.
Did you?
This was way before vampires were, like, a thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of started that whole,
the
whole vampire.
Trendsetter.
Yeah. So this preceded Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, it was way before
that. How about that?
Yeah.
So did it precede Nosferatu in the early 1900s?
It came after the Bela Lugosi one.
Oh, it did.
So it was after that, in between that and Interview with the Vampire.
It was right between those.
Yeah, and after the 80s one.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm an actor. I mean, there's times where, you know, I've come home. And I've been starving, and then I've hit a drive-through, and I've gotten food for myself, and then I got home, and then my wife has said, I'm starving, I've been waiting for you to eat, have you eaten yet today? And I have said, no, so I'm acting.
You're pretending,
that's
playing
acting.
A role.
I'm
sure.
Saying I'm still hungry.
Counts.
So you don't leave the wrappers in the car? Because my husband, we have a garbage can right outside the car.
Yeah, no.
He does the same thing, but I find the Taco Bell wrappers right there.
I get rid of all. I do like CSI, like drive-through.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I look. I'll even stop a couple blocks, and I'll look for salt packets.
Yep.
I'll look for any type of what gets me more than anything is when you put the receipt with the change
into the cup holder or whatever.
That's kind of a giveaway.
Yeah, you have to be careful.
And now if like my buddy has a Tesla and when we hang out, I'm like, we realize on a car like that or any new car, you can't do anything shady because the car knows everything that you did. Like, if you have a Tesla, that thing knows how many drive-through McDonald's you've hit. And because it's always sending info to the Tesla people to let them know what your habits are. So I want to start, like, a company. I think I'm going to open up a car lot. It's going to be called Burner Car.
And what will that be? What
it's
will
just
have
cars there? With no technology on.
Zero.
Like, so if you want, like Chevettes, Fieros, just stuff like that has no technology.
Yeah.
So that way you can just drive around
undetected.
You're
going to make $1 million, John.
What's that thing with Will Smith and Lex Luthor?
What is it?
Where he didn't want any technology? Enemy of the State?
Oh, right, yeah.
Or something where he kind of was a weird guy. He had an old station wagon, that way it's not trackable. Yeah. I'm starting to become that guy.
You should get an El Camino because then you can put all the junk in the back and it won't smell because it's outside, like a pickup truck meets a car.
That's what I'll do. I'll get like a bunch of cans. Almost like I'm just doing like yard work. And
good
that
idea.
Way, it, like I have a crew. I'll get one of those big coolers, those big igloo orange coolers.
You're a thinking man.
Throw that in the back with a weed blower. And stuff, and that way I can just put like trash.
You're a very smart man.
And then my wife will go, when was the last time they made Pepsi bottles? I haven't seen Pepsi bottles in some time. Is that a Bartles and James wine cooler?
Oh, yeah.
And the old guys on the porch are in there.
Yep.
By the way, that's, I think, what that guy out there talking to Abe Lincoln, I think he's telling him. Have you had a wine cooler yet?
Yep. Suggesting
Abe
a wine
Lincoln
cooler.
Looks mad. He's taking what would make Abe, like, if you have a hat on, uh-huh. I have a hat on.
Right. We both
what
have
What type
stove.
Of conversation would we get into where you would take your hat off to express
any emotion?
If you're giving me directions, would you take off your hat?
No.
And go
never.
And use your hat to go.
No.
Or the only time you would take off your hat and Abe Lincoln has the hat off is if you're about to throw it down. Like you take it off and go, dang, damn it.
Right.
This is not what I wanted to happen to Michigan Avenue. Like that would be the thing.
Right. It's true. It's very, very true.
You've made me think more about that statue today than I have in the last 2 weeks it's been up there. I love it.
It's a baggy sweater that the guy's wearing. It
is. You should stand in front of the statue all day long and if people pass by. Well, not tours.
Just people have questions.
You know what I'm wondering? Maybe you can help me out with this. Do that.
This was the guy. This is Harold Obranovich. He invented the sweater vest.
Right. Right.
And
point that out to people.
And his great-great-grandfather was Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
And
so this
that's
is
kind
a meeting of their minds.
Yeah, Ben Franklin made the patent for a sweater vest. And what happened was
is
somehow it came through the you know, the family and stayed in the family that they invented.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and his son was named V. That's how they came up with
the
V-neck.
After his son.
Yeah, because his son didn't want buttons.
Right.
Too lazy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Or uncoordinated.
Well, he was young.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? He didn't want to be like the dad.
Is your wife also in show business?
No. She was on a reality show back when everybody got a reality show.
Which of the
she
shows?
She was on this show called America's Toughest Jobs, where it's the same people who did like Ice Road Trucker.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Deadliest Catch, all those type of shows.
Yeah.
Being your wife is the deadliest job?
Yeah, that was it. And then she did, she was on that. It was on NBC.
Now, does she
Which
know...
was hilarious to show you how many people were on reality shows back then.
Oh, yeah.
I was on Last Comic, and...
Is that when Phyllis Diller said you were the cute one?
Yeah, way back then.
Oh.
We hooked up. But,
congratulations.
So I did that, and then something else, and my wife we were talking about money, and she goes, you make way... She goes, I can never find a job that I'll make as much as you.
Mm-hmm.
And then because you have, it's just not, it's not right. And it was just this weird, we just met each other. I'm like, it's not a competition.
Right.
It's not a thing. I'm not going to tell people pay me less.
Right.
If this is what they're willing to give me, why would you do that? She goes, I want to get on a TV show. This is literally, I mean, we're way younger than we were now. We're having one of these dumb conversations. And I go, fine, go get on a TV show. I don't care. And then I leave. The next week, she goes, I booked a commercial.
Just like that.
No,
she's not an actress. I go, how'd you book a commercial? I don't know. I went in. It's a Kellogg's national spot.
Wow.
And I go, you got a Kellogg's national spot?
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
And then the next week she goes, yeah, I've been going in on this thing. I have to see like a shrink. Do you want to see me for? I go, they're vetting you for like a network show. And she goes, yeah, it's some NBC show. And those are the only two things that she ever did. Cause she's like, I don't like that at all. But she did it out of spite.
Yeah, right. Just to get back at
and
you.
And succeeded. That drove her.
She needs to, so now I pick fights all the time to hope
she'll get motivated. A better job.
There is no way you can become a heart surgeon. Listen, you're a woman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's probably not going to work. And two, there is no way you can put $250,000 in our 401k in 6 months. I don't think you have it in you.
Now, does she know that a lot of times now what happens is if you get on a reality show, it's the pathway to the presidency. She could be the president of the United States.
First woman president.
Yeah, yep. We both bailed. Like both of us were on just when you thought it was just that was what you did.
Yeah.
The rule was is you got on a reality show. Then if you were famous enough, then you got on the reality show where you danced.
Yes.
And then after that, maybe started doing a little nose candy, got a little messed up in the head. Mm-hmm. And then you're on the rehab.
Dr. Drew's show.
You're on the rehab.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a very clear path of what you
not
did
anymore,
as a reality
John.
Thing. Now it's all...
You can be the president now.
Now it's all over the place. Now you can skip the I'm a bad cooker reality show
right?
And just go right to president.
It's Not a bad path.
President Lincoln, yep. Who's out in our courtyard.
It all ties in. John, I want people to come and see you. That's what I want. If you'd like to see John Heffron perform live for you, why not? Chicago Improv is the place to be. That's tonight through Sunday, chicago.improv.com. And, John, your own website is your name. It's johnheffron.com.
johnheffron.com.
That's it.
Nice to see you again.
10:57 after 10. Do you guys still have to do double time temps? Is that not over anymore?
They don't make.
No, you did radio on a station that played music and stuff too, right?
Yeah.
So you in the mornings.
During a horrible time of music.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot of Dishwalla.
Oh, where are they now?
Umbop, Hanson.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
Like
song.
If we were to go to that guy who's next to Lincoln, I bet you in his back pocket he has a cassette. He's got a mixtape. You can tell.
Oh, I'd love to see what was on his mixtape.
He's got the first Taurus. The guy in the thing has the first Ford Taurus, and it's got a cassette player in it, and he's got all those songs.
That's why he's famous.
That's why he's talking to Lincoln.
Thank you, John.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate
it. That's John Heffron again. He's at the Improv tonight through Sunday. We'll take a quick break, then some news. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Patrick McDonald joins us right now to talk about the world of films. Patrick is a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's the chief guide over at ChicagoFilmTour.com. This is your chance to see all the great locations in and around Chicago where films have been made. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
How are you?
You have a band. Do you play? You sing?
Yes, I am the lead singer of the Telepaths.
The Telepaths.
Did you know Wendy was going to ask that question?
No, I did
not. I'm sorry,
not.
I could not get past the guitar solo on that Heart song, and I want to take guitar lessons.
I
thought maybe you played guitar as well.
I don't. I can't say it on the radio, as I usually define a lead singer.
As?
They play with themselves.
Oh, Patrick, clean it up. There's little kids listening.
The FCC is coming.
Well, there's little kids listening. This is the time of year
yes, sir.
That the films kind of shape up a little bit.
Yes,
you have summer
do.
Blockbusters. You just have everybody trying to punch each other. Tom Cruise movies where he just goes up and punches people at random. Yes. And a lot of the world blows up in a lot of movies. But now into the fall, movies yes. start to get serious because they're Oscar contenders, right?
That's right. That's right.
Is that really a system that they do?
Yeah.
It's kind of bizarre, too, because you run the pattern of your year as a film critic on what happens. And in the early year, they dump all the movies. In the spring, there's the also-rans. The summer, of course, the blockbusters. And now the fall, the Oscars.
Yeah, the more serious contenders.
Yes.
And then in the beginning of the year, also, movie companies don't want to put out their best product in January and February because everybody's attention span is short. And at Oscar time, they won't remember a movie that was out in January.
Well, they do split some of the difference into the January and February months before the Oscars, but they're announced on the 24th, so, for the regular consumer, it's just, they can catch up with them, I suppose.
Wow, yeah. The things you learn.
The regular consumer.
Mm-hmm.
That's me.
Yep. Yep. So now.
Nothing regular about you, Wayne.
What you see in papers and in magazines and online
yes.
is people going, here's 8 movies or 10 movies or a dozen movies that are really going to change the landscape.
Right.
Are there some that we should be looking forward
yes,
to?
Yes, definitely La La Land. Have you heard of La La
yeah.
Land?
I've
yes.
actually heard of it too.
A new movie musical that pays tribute to movie musicals from the past, but also gives it a vital boost in the present day. So Damien Chazelle, who did Whiplash, is the director.
Loved that movie.
Wasn't that great?
So much.
It's an amazing movie. That was my favorite movie of that year. It was just a
speaking of Whiplash, mm-hmm. the guy who played the kid in Whiplash, for people who didn't see it,
yeah,
it was
Miles Teller.
He plays a drummer with a teacher who's a little bit forceful in his ways. I just saw clips from a Miles Teller movie that I think is coming out either this week or next week,
uh-huh.
sometime in the next few weeks, a boxing movie.
Yes.
And he did what all great actors do. They totally just reinvent themselves and their mm-hmm. body structure for a movie. I was very impressed.
Well, he got beat up in the first one. In the Whiplash,
in
so it's
Whiplash,
kind of the same
got,
thing.
Right, well, yeah, I guess.
Not that big of a stretch.
But this time, he's cut. He's all yeah. he's ripped from working out and stuff.
He was great in Whiplash. I'm anxious to see him in the new one.
Yeah.
every day I work on the Jake LaMotta part, the second part where, you know, the,
where he lets himself go.
Yes, he lets himself go. So I'm working
more
on that
fun
every
that
day.
Way, isn't
yes,
it?
So La La Land, yes. I have found out that my two teenage boys love musicals, which has been very fun for me. We
that's
just watched
great.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, great.
They're going to watch my favorite musical, West Side Story, with me. Is
oh,
this what kind
wonderful.
Of what this is based on, this
well,
type of thing?
Well, it's sort of based on the past, used like Top Hat and the...
Busby
yeah,
Berkeley. Type
right,
movies.
Right. Use yeah. those as the standard, but it's more of a twosome thing, so more like Astaire and Rogers. And, you know, Ryan Gosling is in it. He seemed a little miscast. We shouldn't talk about it because it's not coming out this week, but, you know, he seemed a little miscast to me. But that's just a minor, minor complaint. It's just a joy.
And
really?
is it taking place back in the heyday of these movies, or is it modern
right
day?
Right now.
Oh, it's taking place
yeah,
now.
They
yeah,
they start out in L.A. and they do a whole dance and song sequence in traffic.
Oh, cool.
How appropriate. So
now, some
I won't
people
give anything else
say of movie musicals that once somebody starts singing or dancing in a movie, it takes them out of it, because rarely in real life do you just see somebody start to sing or dance. But you have to kind of suspend belief when
that's
you see
right.
these, right?
What's happened to our joy, Bill?
I don't know. Where'd the joy go? I don't know.
It's been taken away.
La La Land. All right. So that's one
yes.
that we need to see in the
yes.
next
couple
months.
And there's
a
couple we'll talk about because they're coming out this weekend, Arrival and Loving. But Denzel Washington will be doing his first directorial, I think his first directorial effort, with Fences, August Wilson's Fences, which is coming out on Christmas Day.
This was a play, right?
Yes, a play yeah. Adaptation. August Wilson did that series of plays about Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
sure.
And this is one of them. Jackie with Natalie Portman about Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis for a week after the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Everybody's saying that she is odds-on favorite to certainly be nominated for an Academy Award and possibly win it. She's just that good.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
She's a pretty good actress, except yeah. not in that Star Wars movie. To me, she didn't do much. She looked good. I don't remember which one it was.
Which one was it?
Wait, who is this we're talking about?
Natalie Portman.
Yeah.
Oh, she's in, right.
Was she in the
Queen Amidala?
Queen Amidala.
Yes, she was not very good in right. it, in my opinion. Nice yeah. to look at, but acting
but
that not
that
great.
Yeah. All right, so that's she's coming great. Out in yeah. November or December?
December, Jackie.
December?
Early December. A Lion with Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman about a boy who is lost in India and gets adopted by parents in Australia. So Nicole gets to go to her Australian accents and roots.
Dev Patel was the actor from...
Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one I just recently saw, Moonlight, an extraordinary film about a journey. And what the director does is does it in three chapters and has three different actors play one individual guy as he goes through his life from a dirt poor, lower middle class neighborhood in Miami to somewhat of an independence as an adult, but still trying to find his way.
Yeah.
And the last section of it is almost like a one-act play, which there's been two movies this year that have done this. Indignation, the Philip Roth adaptation, they had a one-act play with Tracy Letts and Logan Lerman in the middle of the movie, which informs both the beginning and the end. And this is a one-act play at the end of Moonlight that informs the entire picture.
That's kind of cool.
It's really good old-fashioned movie making, you know, taking chances and putting some drama out there that really is different.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Sometimes those work and sometimes they
yes,
don't.
Yes, exactly.
Right? But you're taking a chance.
Right.
I know when Birdman came out a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. people went nuts for it. So many of my friends said, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Right.
And
did you like it?
Couldn't stand
it. I didn't.
Yeah.
I'm glad I saw it, I guess, but I was expecting to love it and was yeah. really like, this is it?
There yeah. were some mixed reviews. It was off kilter. It didn't make my top 10, I don't remember, but yeah.
But I always appreciate when somebody tries to do something a little out of the norm. That's always a good thing.
Right.
But it's so funny. You could say this about any television show or book or
right.
anything that's ever been done. It's funny how polar opposite people can be in their reaction to something like that.
Right. And also, you know, the culture of the movie is always, it's an evolving form. So it always needs to be shaken up
right.
by new creative forces. So.
Patrick, hold that thought.
Yes.
Patrick McDonald is here, a film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com, a great website, also chief guide for Chicago Film Tour. Visit their website and set up a tour of the greatest locations here in Chicago where movies have been made. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more coming your way in just a little bit. Patrick McDonald is here. He's live in studio, ladies and gentlemen.
That's
He's a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. He's the chief guide, the chief tour guide over at ChicagoFilmTour.com. It's a good time. You get to see all your greatest scenes in Chicago movies where they were filmed. All right, Patrick, yes. Do we want to go on to this week's films, or are there a couple more we should know about in terms of Oscar contenders between now and
let's go to this week's films, because there are a couple of contenders in this week's film. And what is opening is Arrival.
Yeah.
Arrival is in the genre of the humanistic science fiction film.
I saw the trailer for this. It looks really good. Is this the Chris Pratt one?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jeremy Renner and Amy Adams.
Oh, okay. I did see it. I got it mixed up. There's a Chris Pratt one, too, that looks good. But yes, I did see this. I remember Arrival. Mixed them up.
But anyway, it's amazing. It really is. It really is about, it's science is art and art about who we are. So it really goes into the humanity of, the visit from an alien being. And very, very interesting. And actually, after the election, I saw it yesterday afternoon, and after the election was a perfect tonic. Because here is, a sort of an invasion. And how do we solve this invasion? We do what they did in the movie.
It's funny you say that, because there's a science fiction classic, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, which, even though it's sci-fi, it really is, it's political, really. It's thinly disguised politics.
Yes.
And I kept wondering to myself, will there be a version of that now with everything that's going on politically? Star Trek also, even though it's science fiction, is one of the most political shows of all time.
Absolutely.
So the two really can go hand in hand.
Yes, exactly. Well, it's just about humanity. Science fiction is literally about man's ability to mix science with his evolution.
Yeah.
So
a little while ago, when Wendy was confusing the two, there's two movies that are coming out that are
similar.
They're
similar,
and you said they're all the same, really. So with sci-fi, sometimes it falls into that bracket of people going, "Oh, I've seen this before." What separates this movie, Arrival, from the other films that are similar to it?
That's an interesting point, because again, walking in, I'm like, okay, another alien comes down to Earth, kind of thing, but. I think what separates it is that it's just, like 2001: A Space Odyssey. It really isn't about the technology. It's about how humanity interacts with the technology.
Yeah.
So that definitely is what
should
makes
we
it
be
different.
Afraid
Amy
of it?
Adams
should we embrace it? It's that kind of a question.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. I
trust,
like it.
Trust,
it's Arrival,
Bill.
And it comes out tomorrow.
Yes. And Loving, the landmark case, Loving versus Virginia. About interracial marriage, how it was illegal in 27 states, and then the Supreme Court finally heard the case in 1967, and this was the couple that put it into motion.
Wow, that sounds good.
It's really, I mean, if you're interested at all in American history and the civil rights era, this is a human story that occurred underneath all the showy stuff that King was doing and such during that era.
Who's in this?
Now, it's a Joel Edgerton, who is a character actor who is...
You'll know him as soon as you see him.
Right, exactly.
See him in a bunch of stuff.
He's getting his first lead, and there's a newcomer playing Mildred Loving, which is Ruth Negga, and she is just extraordinary. She has the subtlety that I think Edgerton doesn't have. He's kind of playing it one note. To me, there was something missing in this film. I don't know. I couldn't really quite... put a finger on it. I still give it 3.5 out of 5 because it's a very important story that everybody needs to see, especially in the era that we're working in right now.
Yeah.
But a little something missing in it for me.
Joel Edgerton was in a movie a couple of years ago where he was some guy's friend as a child, and then they reconnected years later, and Joel Edgerton, was the adult that wouldn't leave him alone. Did you ever see this movie? I'll find the title for you. He was as creepy as creepy could be. He's a good actor, but when he wants to play a creep, he's really good at it.
You always bring up something that perplexes me, Bill.
Yeah, that's my job. That's my job. Almost Christmas.
Almost Christmas.
Chris Pratt. Forget it.
That Chris Pratt's in a movie, please?
This is that genre of film that has popped up lately. And I think, Tyler Perry has a lot to do with it, because you know, it's a comedy. It's a family comedy.
Right.
So it's almost Christmas, and the matriarch of the family has died this year, that Christmas year, which is 2016. And Danny Glover is getting the family together so he doesn't feel so lonely on Christmas. And hijinks occurs.
That seems believable.
It is believable.
So this is like a Tyler Perry movie, but it's not Tyler Perry. It's somebody.
I'll tell you the Tyler Perry influence. It's always the comedy in it, the extreme comedy, almost the Three Stooges-like comedy that he likes to do.
Yeah.
You know, even though these are, you know, upper middle class African-American family, very high-level citizenry, one running for Congress.
Yeah.
They get involved in firearms and selfies and getting stuck in windows and things like that.
I'm watching the trailer as you're saying this, and all this has happened. They're taking selfies. They're crawling through windows. A lot of singing. There's a singing involved scene,
yes. But, you know, I was talking to Omar Epps, who's in the movie. I interviewed him for the film. And we were talking about, you know, one of the things that gets ignored, and going back to the civil rights movement, is the rise of the middle-class African-American family after World War II.
Yeah.
Because opportunities were there, and they took it. And this is an offshoot, I think, of that phenomena,
and
if I can talk about it.
Unlike a Tyler Perry movie, there's no guy dressed as a woman, right? You're not getting any of that.
Unless you exclude Monique. But no, I don't know.
All right.
Sorry, Monique.
Who thinks Jeff Garland is in the studio with us? Honest to God.
Your voice is a little similar to Jeff Garland.
Ask Jeff Garland about Curb Your Enthusiasm instead of movies.
Jeff, will there be a new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Oh, the Goldbergs are doing well.
Right, can I tell you, I love that show so much.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It is one of that, and the Real O'Neills are like my two favorite
Real
shows.
Real O'Neills rocks. That is, I rarely watch television, but I love that show.
It's really
show.
Good. It's Patrick McDonald. It's not Jeff Garland. That's funny. Yes, that's why we relate so well.
Exactly.
Patrick, thank you so much. If you
want
to read
guys.
Patrick's full reviews, go to HollywoodChicago.com, and then, like we said, see the tour of Chicago and all the great locations that they've filmed things at.
ChicagoFilmTour.com.
Ask for Jeff Garland.
Ask for Jeff Garland. Hey, Jeff Garland's on the tour, so there you go.
Oh,
it's all synchronistic. Give thanks for Bill and Wendy.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Patrick. More after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder.
Hello.
Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Bill.
Nice to see you. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, you can call us there or text us there. That's up to you. Here's something that I find interesting, and it never even occurred to me. Fans of Disney World, and I'm guessing Disneyland, are concerned because they don't want Donald Trump in the Hall of Presidents.
Well, they're going to, too bad. They're going to have to put him there.
Right. And soon, actually. You know that? That's coming up soon. But I'm reading all these tweets from people, Disneyphiles, as they're called, people who loved all things Disney, very upset because he will be invading the Hall of Presidents. If you've ever been to Disney World in Orlando, Florida, you know that you're doing a lot of walking when you're there, and it's going to be hot. You know that for a fact. And after a while, you're going to need to take a break.
That's the best place to go for the air conditioning. And you learn something. And it's pretty cool.
Hall of Presidents?
Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I liked it. I didn't love it. It's long. It's 20-something
minutes.
It is long. And they show you a film before then about Abraham Lincoln, and that's fine. But then I brought my daughters to see it, and they said, "This is the worst ride that Disney World's ever had." And it's not a ride, it's a show. But they said, we didn't come here to learn stuff.
It's a bonus if you do. My older son loved it, my younger one didn't, but it was so hot that day that he just kind of dealt with it.
Yeah, sure. It is. It's a nice, as they say here in the article, it's a good place to rest, or they also suggest you could take a nap when you're in there. But it is, I mean,
it's cool.
The spectacle of seeing all the presidents.
The animatronics
at a
whatever
time,
they are.
Yeah.
It's better than Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Or
better.
Showbiz Pizza Place when the bear would come and play the banjo.
Yeah, that's kind of fakey. I would recommend an attraction where they combine both the musical symmetry of Showbiz Pizza with the Hall of Presidents and have them all together. Have the big rat singing a song with all the presidents. It says, when it's time to sit down for a while and you're in the Magic Kingdom, you should make a beeline to Liberty Square for their Hall of Presidents exhibit. It's a 23-minute attraction. It does seem to take a long time when you're in there.
Seems longer than that.
It does.
Gotta be honest
with
you.
It does. It does. Well, they've restructured it. When I was a kid, Abe Lincoln made a speech.
He still does.
He would stand up. No, now it's Barack Obama who does it.
No, there are various presidents that stand up and say things. It's not just him.
I saw it last year, and it was they're all there.
But they all come alive at different points.
Yeah, but the only one that talked was Barack Obama. Like, it used to just be Abe Lincoln. The rest of them stand there and they nod.
But they have a spotlight on them and they become animated for a second.
Yeah.
They just don't talk, right?
Right.
Okay, I don't remember.
Because I used to like, and I don't remember which two presidents did this, but two presidents, when I was a kid, they didn't do this as an adult because they've changed a little bit with Barack Obama. But when Lincoln used to make his speech, one of the presidents, I think Garfield, like leans over to poke, and he like with his hand he shields it, and he like whispers something like, "Boy, this is going on a long time," or something, you know. Like, as kids, I'd always watch for that. It's like, oh, wouldn't you rather be in the Haunted Mansion or Pirates of the Caribbean instead of here?
Only you think of that.
With the 2016 presidential election now done and over, it now means that Disney has got to get started on constructing a new robot of President-elect Donald Trump. All along in the back of our Disney file minds, we had been quietly worrying and thinking about the prospect of Trump being there in the Hall of Presidents, or as they call it in the Magic Kingdom, HOP. I've been there 20 times. I've never heard anybody refer to it as HOP, but okay. Now it is a fact and a reality, and for some it is very hard to swallow. So then over at HelloGiggles.com, Wendy, the website that I visit frequently, they have all these people tweeting in, please don't let this happen. We don't want Trump in the Hall of Presidents.
He has to be in there.
Here's one. It says, do not let Trump into Disney's Hall of Presidents. Don't. Don't do that. Don't. Here's another one. Think about how sad the Disney Imagineers are right now, realizing they have to sculpt a Trump for their Hall of President. Here's another one. My dad is so upset that Trump is going to be in the Hall of Presidents. This is too real. Another one. This is going to ruin Disney World's Hall of Presidents. Here's another one. Do you guys understand that Trump is going to be in the Hall of Presidents at Disney World? You have tainted the happiest place on earth.
Bill Cosby was in there for a while, too.
In the Hall of Presidents?
No, in the little statue area at Epcot, or not Epcot, at, I don't know, their film one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they took him out. Like, right after I visited, I took a picture going, why is he still here?
Right.
And he was taken out soon thereafter.
Right.
But Donald Trump, guys, is our president as of January 20th.
We've had presidents who have done some bad things, and they are already in the Hall of Presidents. You can't leave out
any
of the presidents. So even though some of us are unhappy with the, you know, the election of Donald Trump, I think he wanted to be president just so he could be in the Hall of Presidents.
That makes me want to be president. I would like to see myself in animatronic
form.
Wouldn't
that be fun?
And I am on the website at DisneyWorld.com, and the Hall of Presidents will be closed for refurbishment from January 17th through June 29th of this 2017 year.
That can't just be to add him.
It sure doesn't seem like it would take that long, but from January 17th through June 29th, 2017. Please check back later for updates. In the meantime, explore the other Magic Kingdom attractions. And it's in bright red when you go on their website. So it is going to be down for, 6 months?
That's one that I don't think your average tourist will be that upset about. Like, if you go, everybody has a favorite ride or a couple of favorite rides at Disney World, but I can't see anybody just bursting into tears with the news that the Hall of Presidents is closed. It's fun to see, like, every 15 or 20 years. But
yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
you don't
one
have to
you have
go
to go
every
visit.
Time.
Yeah. There's no reason for that.
If I was Donald Trump, I would want to be in Haunted Mansion.
Wouldn't that be more fun?
Yes. Sitting at the head table when the ghosts are going around.
I'm the best ghost. he would taunt people as they came in. Now, here's a follow-up to something yesterday. We mentioned that Jake Arrieta had put out a tweet explaining that he wants Hollywood to pack up and go, because a lot of people in Hollywood said, if Donald Trump is elected president, I'm leaving the country.
Hashtag, I'll help you pack.
Right. And hashtag, beat it after that.
Yeah.
All right. So now Theo Epstein is getting word of this, and he's not too pleased.
I can see where that would bother him.
Cub President Theo Epstein hasn't exactly hidden his political views from public. Last month, he gave a donation to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, at a fundraiser in Chicago right after signing his big five-year, $50 million extension to stay with the Cubs. But Theo Epstein prefers to separate his political views from his job and thus was in a sticky situation on Wednesday morning after Jake Arrieta, a pitcher for the Cubs, tweeted about Donald Trump's election. Here is the direct tweet. Time for Hollywood to pony up and head for the border. Hashtag, I hope you pack. Hashtag, beat it. This tweet, a reference to celebrities who claimed that they would move out of the United States if Trump got elected, had more than 14,600 retweets by early Wednesday morning, and Arrieta was being praised and criticized on Twitter for giving his opinion. At the general manager's meeting, which was Wednesday, yesterday, Epstein didn't care to comment on the election results, feeling that it was too soon. He said, I'm still processing. When I asked him, this is a writer for the Chicago Tribune, when I asked him if he was okay with Arrieta trolling Clinton supporters to his nearly 353,000 followers, Epstein paused and said, I'm still processing that too. He said, I believe in the First Amendment, but I also believe that we should be mindful of how other people feel.
It could be taken two ways, though, because we were talking about the celebrities that were going to leave. Cher was going to go to Jupiter. I'll never forget that, and I hope that goes well for her. And we were kind of saying, go ahead. I don't really care.
The point that you and I were trying to make in this the other day was that every time there's an election, you get a handful of celebrities saying, if this guy wins, if this woman wins, I'm leaving the country. I can't stand it anymore. I have to go to Canada or wherever. And they never, ever follow up on it.
And they won't this time either.
No.
How's Cher getting to Jupiter?
Cher's very popular on Jupiter. I was looking at her Billboard sales, and Jupiter was her third best-selling planet, and that's not bad.
Well,
she'll do well on Jupiter.
Hasselhoff in Germany, so why not
right.
Cher in Jupiter? On
right.
Jupiter.
But everybody on Jupiter is like, oh, with the farewell tour. Seriously, how long can this thing possibly last? All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we've got more show for you. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. On a scale of 1 to 10, how uncomfortable do you think this morning was for both Donald Trump and President Barack Obama, two guys who I don't believe really like each other much?
I don't either, and they don't have to like each other. But see, that's what I hate about all this meanness and hate spewing, because ultimately, I know Barack Obama did not expect to be handing over the keys to Donald Trump.
I don't think he
but
did.
He is.
Right.
So you have, I mean, really, in all of life, just can't, the hate has to stop. I am not happy about the outcome. I will admit that, but I have absolutely no choice but to hope that we all come together. And it's a great 4 years.
For the last 8 years, Donald Trump has been saying that Barack Obama should not be president of the United States because he was not born here in the United States. And this he's been
he admitted
so persistent.
At the end, though, didn't
yeah,
he, that
toward
he was.
The end, yeah, he finally did a couple of months ago. President Obama just mentioned during the campaign that he doesn't believe that Donald Trump is fit to be the president of the United States. So now you're forced into a position through protocol, through the handing of the keys, although I would suggest a safety deposit box. That's what we did when we bought our house, not because we didn't like the people move. It just made it easier. So now they're forced to do a little walk around through the White House and be cordial to each other. And I'm sure it's just not the two of them, right? You pack
oh,
them.
The press,
other,
there's
yeah,
a lot of people
right.
there.
But just think about the small talk that had to have been made between those two today and how uncomfortable that small talk must have been.
But doesn't that show you that at some point we all have to swallow our pride and
yes.
deal with what's going on?
Yeah, without a doubt, sure.
I mean, you know, it is weird what was slinging before.
Right.
And
but do you imagine there was that moment that was like on Seinfeld, that hello Newman. Do you
right,
think there was
right,
a hello
right,
Newman?
Yes.
Hello Trump. Hello Obama. Do you think that went on at all between those guys?
Michelle, is he here yet?
Yeah. Tell him I'm not available. Tell him I'm making a sandwich.
Maybe we can reschedule.
Right.
Making a sandwich.
Yeah.
What kind of sandwich would Barack make? And would he make it himself?
Something that took a long time to make. Just whatever ate up the most
turkey
time.
Club?
Yeah.
With turkey bacon? And turkey mayo.
Yeah. I don't know. I just, I know that this is part of the process, but I also know that you go, oh, I just don't want it. Both of them. I don't want to do this. But this is, that's, I guess that's that's what you get when you have the job, right?
And that's
a
life.
Lot of stuff you don't want to do.
That's life. That's why everybody should keep from burning bridges, because it's especially in radio.
But I'm sure you've been in places where you're forced to sit next to or talk to somebody that you go, oh, if I had to make a list of the last three people in the world I'd want to talk to, this guy, and I have to because of my job, I have to talk to this guy.
And we've all been there, and it's like you can't always get what you want.
Right.
So, I don't know. And again, Kim, were there any arrests from the protests last night? I
believe there were six.
And it was, from my understanding, mostly young people, is that?
It was young people. I went over there yesterday at about 3 and talked to a bunch of Columbia University students. It was mainly millennials protesting.
Which is funny because they didn't go vote. And then my question is, because they wanted Bernie Sanders so badly, did the millennials think, well, since I can't vote for Bernie, I'm not going to cast a vote at all?
Well, these students that I talked to were very passionate. They all voted. And, you know, they were disappointed because it was actually, many of them, their first time to vote. So they were just very disappointed in the whole process.
But I don't know. I mean, the first time I voted, I can't even remember who I voted for, but I don't know if my candidate won.
Warren G. Harding.
Did he win?
Yeah, he was the winner.
I'm not that old.
Congratulations.
But I know the first election means a lot, but you at some point go, oh, yeah, well, I didn't get the winner this time.
Sure.
And
I don't know anyone who has picked the winner. I mean, who's voted for the winner every time. So you're going to probably be disappointed in the victor half of the time, probably, right?
Well, again, we have a microphone to say what we want, and it's if people have a right to assemble and show their dissatisfaction with things.
A week from today, we are going to have Bernie Sanders on the show. And I've wanted to, ever since he became a factor in this, I've really wanted to talk to and meet Bernie Sanders, and I'm so looking forward to this. There was a story at thehill.com last night and this morning about Bernie Sanders. Now, the headline is a little misleading because the headline says Sanders signals willingness to work with Trump. And it sounds like he's looking for a cabinet position with him, but he's really not. If you read the story over at thehill.com, what it says is that he's hoping, you know, that Donald Trump reaches out to people like him, not so much in a cabinet position
right,
role.
Right, but for advice or...
Right.
Words of wisdom.
Where's the quote? To the degree that Mr. Trump is serious, this is from Bernie Sanders, to the degree that Mr. Trump is serious about pursuing policies that improve the lives of working families in this country, I and other progressives are prepared to work with him, the Vermont senator said in a statement that was released on Wednesday. But to the degree that he pursues racist, sexist, xenophobic, and anti-establishment policies, we will vigorously oppose him. So even though the headlines makes it look like Bernie Sanders is going, hey, if there's an opening there on the cabinet, here I am. It's not. He's saying
I didn't take it to mean that.
Progressives are interested in whatever it takes to further the betterment of the country.
And 708, it's been one day, Wendy, quit telling people what to think. Trump is a despicable human. And that's your opinion. And I didn't vote for him. But, I mean, what can we do? The decision has been made. So am I going to just... be mad and upset and say, oh, yeah, this is terrible. I'm going to say he's going to be our president. I respect the office, and I'm hoping for the best. How am I telling people what to think? That's how I'm thinking.
Right. That's why we mentioned this at the top of the show. I'm torn on the protests yesterday because it's too late. They're not going to be,
it's
no
not
matter how many people
anything.
Protest, they're not going to go, well, we should really take a second look at this. But by the same token, I more than understand that
Me
frustration
too.
At the outcome. So if you want to gather with like-minded people and share that,
what's
why
the difference
not?
With, you know, spewing forth stuff on Facebook? It's the same thing.
Right.
These people wanted to stand together in unity and say we're not happy with this decision.
And they did.
Well, and this whole thing came out of Facebook. The
protest,
yes, it was all organized on Facebook. And the one thing that impressed me about these kids was that they were just very passionate. And I hope they continue to have that fire and use it in a positive direction.
Right. Right. Not fire literally.
Yes, not literally.
Okay, good.
Although in
just
one of the
sure.
protests, somebody was burning the American flag. I think that was the New
not
York
the way to
one.
Do it. Don't do that. All right, we'll take a quick break.
And every day of the week, we are setting you up with the Bill and Wendy Firehouse Subs lunch break. We have a Firehouse Subs gift card for you. And what caller should they be, Bill?
Oh, today I would be caller number 8 at 312-981-7200.
It's a Firehouse Subs gift card just for you. And if you go visit a Firehouse Subs, ask for the Bill and Wendy special. You'll get the seasonal turkey and cranberry sub for only $4.99. Find a Firehouse Sub near you at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen.
Steve Bertrand's a minute away. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's part two of our program. I'm Bill. That's Wendy. And it's our program.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear, as we
say. Program.
Program. 312-981-7200. That's the program's phone number. Call us or text us or do both if you're so inclined.
That's how they say it in the South.
Program?
A program.
Yep.
See, that's where I get it from my mother-in-law. Program.
She says that?
In Wendy.
That's how she says your name? Have you ever called her out on it and say, I'm pronouncing it slightly different than your version? Have you said that to her? You
how
can't.
Can I say that
you
to
can't.
Her?
You can't. Be the beginning of the end.
She's from Corinth, Mississippi. Right. So she does it. Wendy. Yeah.
It's kind of cute, though, isn't it?
It is cute. And it's funny, though, because she's been here for, I don't know, almost 50 years. And
but
I think,
still has the southern accent.
I think it's
accent.
Getting thicker.
You don't lose it.
Kim,
it's adorable.
Yours is barely traceable. Every
mine
once
is,
in a while.
Except when I get around my parents or friends, you know, from Louisville, it comes out.
Louisville, right?
I've always said Louisville, but a lot of people say Louisville.
So the person who lived in Louisville called it Louisville.
Right, but there are lots of people in Louisville who call it Louisville.
Kim, the only time I notice you having a southern accent is when you say the phrase, I don't know nothing about birth and no babies. That's the only time I ever pick up any southern accent from
or
you.
Or hi, y'all. Although Stephanie's y'all is way better than mine.
Oh,
and she's from Louisiana. Is that where
she is
from?
Yeah.
Do you say Louisiana or Louisiana?
The locals, I believe, again, go with Louisiana. I'm pretty sure. Louisville, Louisiana.
Illinois.
Yeah.
Come on, feel the Illinois.
That's the way to say that. I have a story that we were going to do the other day, but then this crazy election came and everything went crazier on us.
That's what I was just asking Bill off the air, when we can get back to the fun on this show, and in 4 years or sooner.
I think we can dip ourselves in fun a little bit, but not fully immerse ourselves in fun. Not yet. Not until we know the direction.
All right.
And then we can. Although, you know what's interesting? If I can get slightly political about...
It's hard not to right now. It's still fresh. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Last night, I went out of my way to see how the late night talk show hosts handled everything. You know, I wanted to see how Jimmy...
The results?
Yeah. I wanted to see how they addressed this in their monologues. So I watched, I saw Jimmy Fallon, I saw Jimmy Kimmel, I saw Seth Meyers.
I saw Seth Meyers. It was awesome.
He cried.
I know.
He was crying. It was still fun. It wasn't funny that he was crying.
No.
But he was weeping.
He was saying, I've been wrong about everything. I was wrong when the clown car came in. I didn't think he was going to be left standing. I was wrong in the primary. I was wrong about him winning. So maybe I'll be wrong about my thoughts right now, and he'll run the country well.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the attitude. I can't speak for you, but that's kind of the attitude I'm taking. Please let me be wrong. I would love to be. I've never wanted to be more wrong about anything in my life than this. So please let me be wrong. So he was talking about, this is Seth Meyers, was talking about his mom, who's also named Hillary, and how she's getting up there in years and really wanted in her lifetime to see a female president.
That's when he cried when he
That's
talked about his
when
mom.
When he started to cry.
And he said her name's really not really Hillary. She just changed it for whoever's running, and she was at one point Barack Obama.
Right. Stephen Colbert, although not crying, was also kind of talking about how, in his opinion, how off kilter this whole thing is. And he got a little bit emotional, not to the point of tears. Everybody handled it kind of their own way, but I kept thinking to myself, it's better for their business, for Donald Trump, to be the president because you get more material out of it. You know what I mean? Back when I did stand-up, I always wanted the winner, as selfish as this sounds, and I knew it at the time, this is selfish, it was better for me to have the stranger option win because I had more stuff. I guess you could say that about what we do now.
It's, yeah.
It gives more us more material about. If Donald Trump is the president. So,
which Alec Baldwin, I know, didn't want Trump to win, but he should be really happy he did.
He just got himself easily 4 more years of work on SNL if he wants it.
And poor Kate McKinnon. just as she's nailing Hillary, although she'll be back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
At least on the show.
Right, right. So all last night as I was watching the various hosts in their monologues and how they covered this, I kept thinking, they all know it's better for their job that Donald Trump is the president because it gives, if their opening monologue is 8 to 10 jokes, half of it just wrote itself just by the mere fact that he won. But that was not the mood that I was getting from any of them. Jimmy Fallon seemed to be the most open to it, and he's been criticized like crazy because he was the last of the big talkers to have him on as a guest, Donald Trump. And then he was criticized like crazy because he
just goofed around with him.
Yeah.
But that's what he does.
He made him look like fun, you know?
Listen, he looks like fun.
He does look like fun, doesn't he?
And I bet he would be fun.
Yeah. I would think he is.
As the president, I didn't think so, and he's it, so what do I got?
Right.
And you had said you can't speak for me. You said I hope I'm wrong in assuming what Donald Trump is going to do. I want to go even a little more positive than that. Again, my middle name now is Hope. I'm going to change it legally.
Yeah.
That's all I can do. And, you know, I would love if somebody's listening now that was at the protest last night to call us 312-981-7200. Kim, Kim talked to a bunch of the people and they were really passionate about it, but I would, cause I had mixed emotions on it. It's like you should be able to, assemble with like-minded people and say you're not happy with it, but what does it do?
I'm sure realistically, as they were forming this thing yesterday, and it wasn't just in Chicago, they did it in other cities too.
New York, Philly, LA. Yeah.
I'm positive nobody said, and I bet if we get a really big crowd and we're really loud, I bet somebody takes a second look at this and said, boy, we've really made a mistake. What can we do to fix this? I'm positive that wasn't anybody's mindset last night. But if you want your voice to be heard, I guess you could say, well, if you wanted your voice to be heard, then voting made your voice heard. Yes, it did. But not happy with the outcome.
And not a big turnout, which surprised me. I thought with all those lines in the early voting and even
not a big turnout for the election itself, not for the protests yesterday.
Yes, I'm sorry, for the entire election. You know, I thought for sure this was going to be like the biggest turnout ever.
On Monday when I went into City Hall in Evanston attempting to early vote and I saw hundreds and hundreds of people, I said, wow, they were talking about how this might not be a very realistic number-wise election that people just would say, I don't like either candidate, I'm going to stay home. I don't see any evidence of this. But then there was plenty of evidence of that once the final numbers were in.
Which surprised me.
Yeah.
A couple of texts, which, you know, let's just get it over with right now. Why do you two think you are smarter than Trump supporters? Did we ever say that?
No. I'm not saying I'm smarter than anybody.
You chose who to vote for, they chose who to vote for, and we all had different reasons for it.
Right.
So how is that based on being smart? I don't think that happened. 773, are you two so incompetent you can't talk about anything else? Have you walked around and heard what people are talking about all day?
That's what everybody's talking about.
I mean, we have plenty of other things, which I would love to get to, but that's what everybody's talking about.
Right. All right, whoever that texter is, you're about to get your wish. There's a story we were going to talk about on Tuesday and didn't get to because of the election. We will talk about that next. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You wanted me to read a text.
There is one text, and then there's other stories that are non-political that we're going to get to, but there's one text that I think we should address really quickly.
It.
Did you lose it?
Somebody says they're waiting for Packer talk. I think that was Kim Gordon.
Oh.
All right, here it is. Why would you want Trump to do well? Most of the stuff he promised to do would hurt huge numbers of people. Who wants him to succeed at that? I want to see him do well as president of the United States for all of America.
Right.
Because if he doesn't, we're all screwed.
Right. So the separation there is, again, I'll speak for me, not for you. I don't want that wall. I don't want the banning of Muslims. I don't want a woman who gets an abortion to be punished. That list could go on and on. All those things that he talked about through the campaign. No, I don't want him to succeed on any of those levels, but I want America to be in good shape. That's what I want, you know.
Because we all benefit from that.
Yeah, I'm not about to bet against the home team and say, I want the next 4 years.
I hope he fails.
Yeah.
No, I hope he succeeds, because we're all in this together at this point.
Right, so that's the separation. I hope everybody understood. That's the separation there. All right. So here's a story that came about the other day that we didn't get to talk about at all because of the election. There's a woman who won a jackpot, and a very, very sizable jackpot. I think in the $43 million.
Holy moly.
This happened in August. She's playing a slot machine in August. And
you can win that much on a slot machine?
Yeah, they've got some slots that are hooked up. It's not an individual slot machine jackpot. It's tied into a network of machines. And in some cases, it's not just in that one particular casino, but it'll link up with machines in other casinos, so they can put this giant banner up that says, you know, win $40 million with one spin. And it's accurate because it could be hooked up to
like online
500.
Connected to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. And I've played those games. Your odds aren't very
Show
good.
Off.
I've never won anywhere.
Are they dollar or quarter? Or are they a little
I
of
don't
each?
Remember. I don't remember. But she won. She got all the symbols exactly where they're supposed to be and technically won the jackpot, $43 million. This happened in August. Unfortunately, the casino, now this is in New York, the Resorts World Casino, New York City's Resorts World Casino, told this woman, Katrina Bookman is her name, that even though it looked like she won because of the way the symbols were lined up, that there was a malfunction in the machine's computer system. And so instead, they offered her a voucher for a free dinner.
Okay. Oh, my God. Where do I even begin? I don't care if it's a glitch. If it showed a winner
you
and
won.
It was a dinging and binging and...
Right.
Well, there, it's a technical glitch.
Sorry.
Schmitch.
That's what I would have said.
That is not fair.
It's not even a little bit
I
fair.
I hope she's suing.
Well, here's the story. Listen to this. Katrina Bookman took a celebratory selfie in front of the screen. First of all, I'm not a fan of the selfie, as you know, but this doesn't become, this is an evidency.
Right, proof.
That's a proofy. Right, because a lot of people would have won that and done an insane dance. And
she
then,
probably did that first.
Right, the insane
Come on,
dance.
$43 million,
oh, yeah.
You would have even done an insane
oh,
dance.
Oh, yes.
You would have dropped your pants.
I would have been Rudolf Nureyev. I would have been dancing like you never saw dancing before.
God, I wish you'd win $43 million and I'm standing there with you.
But the smartest part for her, for Katrina Bookman, was taking that picture in front of the winning reels because that there you have it. There's your evidence, right? All right, so she took the celebratory selfie, a celebreffy, in front of the screen displaying her win of, listen to this number, $42,949,672. That's not a bad day.
Good God.
She was subsequently escorted from the floor, Miss Bookman, come with us, and told to return... the next day, because they needed to make a decision. This is the New York's Resorts World Casino.
Okay, but before she left, they said, we got a problem here, lady.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a little glitch.
Yeah. Yep. When she came back, again the next day, she was told that the machine had a glitch and that she hadn't won anything.
Well, oh, my God. So she wins all this money. They tell her to go home.
Right.
At this point, she doesn't know about the glitch.
Right.
So I wouldn't have left.
Right. Where's
I would
my
have
money?
Said, yeah, then I'll go.
She buys a jacuzzi to have it installed in her house.
Right.
Because she's got $40 million coming.
Right.
How could she have left? I would have never left.
Well, here's the fear in leaving immediately is that then you say to yourself, they're not just going to leave those symbols
right.
on the machine. They're going to go inside the machine and do whatever they need to do with it.
Clear it up.
I wonder if the casino knows at that point that she had a photograph of it. Right? Does this story change a little bit? If you're the casino and you know she does or don't think she has a picture of the winning screen, that creates a little bit of a problem in the force a little bit, doesn't it?
It does, but I'm sorry. She won. I don't
she
know
did win.
Why.
Right.
I'm sure there's a glitch clause in the entry
that's...
contract or something like that.
But if when you play a machine in a casino, you're not.
You don't sign anything.
Yeah, there's no contract anywhere, really. I can't think of a place where you have to initial a rules booklet or something.
No, but there's. I'm sure in the state law that allows it or something. They've got to have some cover. I mean, we're assuming it really was a glitch, right?
They say it's a glitch, why would they lie?
what's
in it for them?
Come on.
Can you come up with 43 million reasons why they'd lie about this? I can't.
Again, Bill, would you leave?
No.
I would be like, what do you mean leave?
I just won 43
mil. I'm hot. I'm going to go hit the blackjack table now. What do you mean? I have to leave?
Yeah.
Well, where's my money? Give me my money and I'll leave. Because if I leave, you're going to say I didn't win it. But look, I won it.
Right. And I'd have I'd need witnesses.
Can I get a witness?
Can I get a witness?
Work. You could actually say that line for once.
For the first time, it would mean something.
Yes.
You're here.
All right, so she left. She comes back the next day.
Instead of offering her, again, Katrina Bookman, the maximum amount that is supposed to be allowed on these machines, so they have a maximum payout, and I've seen this in machines too, because I've won a couple times if you play the poker machines, the most they can give out is X amount of dollars. I've never won the maximum. I've never come close.
So what do they give you? The
$6,500,
and then they would mail
you a voucher.
You?
Yeah, you get some sort of a essentially like a banknote saying, "Here's the rest of the balance that we owe you."
And that's fair.
And I can't remember if it's in Indiana, like if it's over $1,000 or something, you have to fill out tax forms right there on the spot.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so here's what the casino did to make up for this glitch. They said to her, you will not get the money, but we will give you a steak dinner.
Okay, first of all...
Seems enticing, doesn't it?
The steak there's not even that good, is it?
I've never been to this particular one, but...
can't be.
It's not that. It's not $43 million good. But here's what I would ask. I'd say, does that come with a potato and choice of beverages? I would ask them that right off the bat.
And 43 mil?
And $43 million.
A $43 million pat of butter.
By the way, I'm a big tipper, I would say. And I'd wink a lot, like more than I need to.
All right, so what does she say to this? Instead of the voucher for the $43 million, she gets a voucher for
a voucher
free steak dinner.
For a steak dinner. The State Gaming Commission told an ABC affiliate that it would be illegal to offer her $6,500 because of what they're calling malfunctions. When there is a malfunction, that voids all pay and play. So the casino is saying essentially what we said in the beginning, we can't give her the money
because it's a glitch.
There was a glitch. It's you can't be.
Well, can't they say that anytime anyone wins?
Yes.
There was a glitch.
Glitch. Glitch.
Oh, you just won blackjack? Oh, the card was bent.
Yeah.
There was a glitch.
There's a glitch. Bookman says the money would have meant a lot to her family in a statement that didn't need to be said out loud because everyone already knows that. She was raised. What if the person writing the story was shocked by that?
Right.
What?
She said what?
What? That's absurd.
We got to move that quote up.
We'll open with that.
Oh, wait. Listen. Hi, Derek. You know about this glitch?
Yes, they got on every machine in every casino, there's like on the left bottom or the right bottom, it says any malfunction voids all wins.
But can't they just say it's a malfunction anytime it wins?
Let me tell you what happened in Arizona. A woman at a Indian casino that was managed by Harrah's got the same thing, $380,000. And then they came to her and says, no, it was a mistake. The machine had a glitch or something, and they weren't going to pay her. It hit the newspapers, and the publicity was so bad, they said that they're going to pay it out of their own money,
wow.
Not out of the Progressive. All the casinos in on that Progressive, the Arizona Nickels or whatever the machine was. And they paid her.
But that was only $380,000 only. Listen to what I'm saying. But this is $43 million.
Yeah, but she wasn't going to get if I'm right, so much of it is divided up over 25 years. You're not going to get all this at once.
Oh, they do that with slot machines, too? I thought that was just a lottery thing.
No, they do that with slot machines. All the Mega Millions in Las Vegas, every place, it's over 25 years.
Wow.
That'd be the day I walk out of there celebrating and get hit by a truck. Derek, thank you for calling. We appreciate it.
Okay. You're welcome.
How about that?
So she didn't get it.
Well, it says, Bookman says the money would have meant a lot to her family. I already told you that. She was raised in a foster care situation, experienced homelessness when she was a teenager. She's raising four kids on her own. She planned to use the millions to buy her son a barbershop, a really nice barbershop, by the way, and to help out her community. And that's where the story stands right now. seems a little unfair. You're right. A casino, every time there was a huge payoff, a casino could go, glitch. We can't pay this. There's obviously been a glitch in the computer.
How about this one? Somebody's unhappy with what we're talking about. We'll just say glitch.
Glitch. All right, we'll take a quick break.
Wouldn't have room for other words.
How funny, Steve. You're part of it.
Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy. Or maybe you'd rather have a steak dinner on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Steve Bertrand, thank you for great news.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Great news.
I'm happy to help.
Well, then you can help me with this and anyone else. Recently bought a new car, a Toyota Highlander. I love it. When you get new cars, there is a thing to turn your lights on where it's on auto. And you leave it on auto, so when you start the car, you don't ever have to touch your lights again. It comes on if you enter Lower Wacker Drive. It does it all automatically.
It's a miracle is what it is.
It is a miracle.
Is that why they call it auto?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, here's the thing. After having old cars, my husband Jim will not, he keeps turning the lights on.
Just a force of habit.
Yeah.
When you start the car, you move to that
right.
dial and slide
And he
it.
Says, I'm sorry. And then the problem happens when I get in the car and then it's nighttime and the lights don't come on and I don't know they're not on because.
You can't see.
No.
It's too dark.
I can see because there are like the kind of parking lights that are always
sure,
on.
Right.
So, I mean, sometimes if you're on a lighted street or something, you're not really noticing.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, it's on auto. I don't ever have to touch it again. So with him turning it to regular and then off when he gets in the driveway is messing it up for me.
Yeah, I could see that.
So I keep asking
He's
him
very
nicely.
Very insensitive, by the way. Very insensitive.
And wrong. He's
and
just wrong.
He is wrong. And see,
man.
This is the funny thing. He says, Wend, I just, for my whole life, I've gotten in a car and turned the lights
sure.
on. And I can't get used to it. And I said, but there's a keyless start now. So that's different. You're not putting the key in anymore. That was a change. You seem to be able to figure out how to press a button and turn the car on.
Of course.
So now that you're learning that new thing on the left side of the steering wheel, don't touch the lights. And this has been going on and on for so long. And I thought of a solution. I'm going to put a condom on it.
I hope you mean on part of the car.
on the light switch. I was thinking, what can I put there? I'm not going to put a post-it note because that's going to get in the way. Mm. So
what
I thought if I, and do they make non-lubricated condoms anymore? I haven't purchased them in a while.
Oh, yeah. I'm
well,
sure
then I am going to put a Ramses or a Trojan on the actual long light switch thing, the turn signal, which also has the light controls. Don't you think if he gets in the car and sees that, he'll go, I think she's trying to tell me something.
Yeah, there's a message there. Safe driving. yeah, I guess you could certainly do that, I imagine.
Can
Why not?
Can you think of any other way that I can...
Small mouse trap.
Well, that would hurt.
Yeah, it would, but after one or two of those little zips, you go, okay, obviously this isn't a good place for my fingers.
I mean,
I'd much rather put my fingers in a mousetrap than an unfurled condom in my car.
No, it'll be furled.
Yeah.
Oh, it is unfurled. No, yeah, okay. I got that mixed up. but it's just, that's the only thing I can think of.
Furl it.
That is the only thing.
Maybe for your anniversary, Steve. We'll see.
A balloon? What? I mean, but.
Well, yeah.
I mean, come on. That's
perfect
size.
Something that's an attention getter. Yeah, I guess it is kind of perfect size, isn't it?
And just so he'll get in the car, he'll go, oh gross.
This. Right.
And then he'll go, what is this? He'll take it off, throw it out, and not get the meaning of what I'm trying to do here.
Hmm.
I mean, didn't you have to get used to it where you just leave it on auto now?
Not so much with the lights, because my last car also had that feature where you set it to auto and then
and
you're
you
fine.
Don't touch it.
But the push button thing, because I get in the car and I have my keys, and the Jeep has the feature where you just push the button and the engine starts up. But I can't tell you how many days I'm not thinking about it, and I just I look for the slot for the key that doesn't exist.
My bad thing now, which I will admit might be worse than the automatic light thing, is I forget to turn the car off.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
I mean, I realize it right away, but you have to press the button to turn it off, but everything's so quiet now. It's like, you know, you pull up, get in your parking spot, and I'm getting my purse together and my keys to lock the car, and then I'm like, ooh, the car's still on.
Right.
But I've never walked away from the car with it on.
Oh, right.
I've always remembered, but I can't think of another way to cover up the turn signal knob that you just leave on auto, don't touch it. I figure after a while with a condom being on there, I can change it every day if necessary.
Yeah. Oh, that's not a bad idea, I guess. Do you have the feature in your car? And I know technology just keeps progressing rapidly, so I don't know if a feature I have in my car is in everybody's car at this point or if it's just new to my car. Do you have the thing where, like in the old days, you had to first push your locks on the doors down, then there was a little button that you'd press that would turn all the locks off if you wanted them off. But now it's such, with the Jeep anyway, where the doors just, after you're going for 40 seconds, they all lock themselves. Do you have that in yours?
Yes, I think it's a speed limit. Like once you hit 5 miles an hour, they lock.
Oh, is yours a speed limit? Because mine is, I think, once I'm going for, I think it's 40 seconds, they just automatically, all four of the locks lock. Now, that sounds like a good thing, but last year, I started the car up, and then I realized there was more frost on the windshield than I wanted, so I closed the door and got out, had the key inside, and just started scraping the windshield, and then at
you got
the 40
locked
second,
out?
I hear the click. Yeah. So the car was going. The key was inside.
That's when you leave the window down. And I think I found a way out of that because my other car has that. That was the only newfangled thing it had.
Yeah.
Because it's an older car. It's an 07, I don't even remember. If you actually hit the button that says unlock, it won't lock you out then.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right, I'll try that.
Okay.
So I hit that as soon as I...
No, not the remote. Like, as you're getting out of the car, you can hit the unlock button on the door, and I don't think
it
locks.
Right. Okay, I'll try that.
Try that before, you know, hold
with
your
key
keys.
With
yes,
me. Yeah.
That would be the way to
all
do
right.
it.
All right.
But it's really happened a couple of times where I don't look at the lights, especially this is terrible, but if you're on the expressway, it's pretty well lit.
Right.
And you think, oh, I got auto on the car. There's no reason to check it. And people are honking at me. What do you want?
They recognize you.
No, that wasn't it. Hi,
look,
Ron.
It's James Spader on the same highway as us.
What do I do about this?
Well, the biggest problem I thought of was that I like having my lights on during the day, too. I happen to have a silver car, and I think it's hard to see, so I have my lights on during the day, although I have that automatic system. But when I turn mine on, I have a Chevrolet product. When I turn mine on, it's a switch on the dashboard. When I turn it off, the auto stays on.
Oh.
In other words, my auto stays on even if I turn the switch to on and then off.
Is it supposed to do that?
It sounds like your auto is connected to the on-off switch.
It is. You have to, like, twist the knob to put it on auto, but there is a little button that says auto on, like, the dashboard. Maybe if I turn that on, it'll always resort to auto.
It'll always be on. That's correct. Even when you turn the lights on by the switch and then turn them off, the auto will stay on if you do that.
It, like, bypasses your actual
right.
twisty thing. Oh, so I don't have to put a condom on it, maybe. I will check that out.
Right.
I hope people are just tuning in to hear that part of the conversation.
I would have gone to a piece of tape, but okay, you can do what you want.
Yeah, but a piece of tape isn't... This is just the perfect size to just...
That's an attention getter. A piece of tape might not get your attention.
Yeah, he'd go, oh, God, what is a piece
Somebody
of tape doing here?
Yeah.
All right, Ron, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Linda has something to say on this as well. Hi, Linda.
Hi. This is my issue with those auto lights. And I'm not sure if it's your car, but when they're on auto, your rear lights aren't lit, just your headlights.
Is that true?
So most of cars are. I don't know how hers is.
Well, at night, there's a sensor on the dashboard, so during the day...
Then you've got a fancy car.
Well, yep. I have one Toyota Corolla that's like a 2012, and it's all rusty and bad and whatever. And that one, the lights are just on all the time. Even if you turn it to off.
They still stay on?
Yeah, they're on all the time. And I think you're right. The outer lights and the rear are not on. But at nighttime, there's a little sensor, so those lights do come on, the rear lights.
Okay, a lot of cars like mine, if I put the auto on, and it's a 2011 Camry, the rear lights aren't on, just the front.
Really?
And a lot of other cars are like that, maybe older than yours, and it's really bad because these people have those auto lights on at night and in the rain, and you don't see their rear lights because they're not on until they break.
Go back to Toyota and tell them that, because honestly,
doesn't sound right.
I think, like, because you have to have a sensor, unless they started in 2012.
It may have, because my car is in 2011. And please, I just have a Samsung washer that just got recalled.
Oh, no. I'm not gonna... Technology has been very bad.
Did it blow
bad
up
to you?
On you?
No, thank God it hasn't blown up. Thank God. So I'm going to get, they did offer a rebate, you know, for if you buy a Samsung, you get X number of dollars.
Yeah.
If you buy something else, you get less. And mine's only not even 2 years old.
Oh,
so I'm
taking
the money and run. But, you know, like I said, my car is an 11 and it doesn't have a sensor. I just have to automatically turn the lights on all the way for nighttime driving.
But see, now that's something that's a habit, so you just do it, and if I borrowed your car, I would know I would have to do it.
Well, yes.
But with the new car, just leave it on auto, then I don't have to worry about it. Linda, thank you very much.
Were you going
to
borrow Linda's car for
some
reason?
No, but you know, it's like you use an older car, you know to turn the lights on.
Right.
But here's a newfangled thing that you don't ever have to touch it again, so if somebody touches it,
it messes up
for everybody else.
Sure. And then it comes to the point where you want to put a condom on the switch there. Go to Speedy Lube. See what they can
Jiffy
do for you.
Speedy Lube, not Speedy Lube.
Go to Jiffy Lube. See what they tell you.
All right, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. All right, a relatively new car in the family. We're both driving it. I love it, my Toyota Highlander. And when I use it, it has an auto switch on the turn signal that leaves your lights on all the time. When Jimmy Mack uses it, he turns the lights on manually. And then when he pulls in the driveway, when he gets home, he turns the lights off. So when I get in the car, I expect them to be on. I don't think I should ever have to touch them. So
no.
I thought I would put a condom on the turn signal that would cover the lights so he would look at it and go, ew.
Yeah.
And hopefully figure out that's my little sign saying, don't touch it.
Right. Because if you're at your house, if there's a condom on something, that's the rule.
What was it? A handkerchief on the light in Happy Days?
I think it was.
414 says it could be the beginning of a great divorce decree having to explain why there is a condom on your turn signal.
There's that.
Well, it wouldn't be on the turn signal.
Right.
I'm just not even going to say anything more. And the last caller was talking about her car that in her 2011 car, if you have it on auto, the rear lights don't go on. And Howard, was she off a little bit?
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It's confusing. In the late 80s, there was a law put into effect for all cars that are shipped to Canada. They have a daytime running light circuit. You start the car, your headlights go on. You get no dash lights. You get no taillights.
Just the exterior headlights.
Correct. So people, like a motorcycle, that way people see you coming.
Okay.
That's the reason for that law. They put it on a lot of American cars also, and when you turn it on automatic, like you're talking about, everything goes on. You get your dash lights, marker lights, tail lights, the whole nine yards.
So she was kind of right.
The previous caller must have one of those imports.
She had a Toyota.
She must have one that has the DRL circuit in it. I've got a 99 van. It has the DRL circuit in it also. So lights go on when you start the car.
Okay, but not the rear lights, and you have to turn those on
manually. Correct. And you're always reminded because you got no dash lights. So if it's dark, you got no dash lights, then you know nothing else is on. Obviously, the answer is don't let Jim drive the truck.
That's it. It's yours and yours alone.
All right. Well, that's a good idea. Thank you.
Right. Thank you so much.
Remember a couple months ago when I got pulled over by one of Evanston's finest because I had, the night before, we had eaten in a restaurant and a valet took my car and must have changed the setting on the lights because I was driving around Evanston with my family and I noticed it was getting darker and I wasn't getting any lights. So I'm moving the lights on and off and on and off trying to figure out which setting. And he thought somebody in the car was being kidnapped because he thought it was a signal.
Right, because the interior dome lights, that's what you were flicking at.
Right.
That would be a great signal. What an observant officer, though.
And then when he pulled me over, I think he thought it was me because I'm the least mature of the four of us in my family.
And you in a car with three girls.
Right.
You're okay, save sir? Me.
Everything
save
okay?
Me.
Right. Right.
All right, and I have also talked about sometimes forgetting to turn the car off, but I catch it before I leave the vehicle.
Yeah.
Jeff, what do you have?
So my ex-wife rented a new car, got a Toyota Prius, and she's going to work, and as she goes into work, she forgets to turn the car off because it has the push-button smart and the smart key technology.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So all day long, for 2 days in a row, she left the car running out in the parking lot. Oh.
Did it run out of gas?
It did not run out of gas.
Good Mind gas you, mileage.
My ex-wife is a PhD MD, but wasn't smart enough to turn the car off for 2 days.
Well, it's confusing, and especially if she just got it.
And that thing, the Prius makes almost no noise at all.
Like oh,
when
yeah.
It's, when it's off or on, it's almost the same. It's nearly, right?
Right. Yeah, it's completely silence. Yeah.
This wasn't the reason for the breakup, I hope.
No.
Okay,
she
good.
Found, yeah.
No,
yeah,
don't tell me what she found. Don't done. Tell me what she found.
All
right.
All right. Well, thanks, Jeff. I don't feel so bad. And another idea, instead of unfurling the condom and putting it on my... You look embarrassed when I say it. But
just
a
little.
It's kind of perfect, though, to just say, hey, pay attention.
Is. Yeah.
But, Steve, you have a better idea? Steve? Hello?
What was Steve's idea?
Duct tape. But that'll leave the adhesive stickiness on it when you take it off.
Oh, yeah, I guess there would be a little, yeah, you'd have a little bit of
and
problem there.
Are you happy with the little trick I taught you with your remote to open
yeah.
your car? That if there's a little button on it and...
I had no idea this existed at all.
There's a little thing that says press, and you never thought to press it.
No, you showed... I don't remember how to do it now, so I'm glad you taught me how
a
to do
A little key comes out of your remote.
I have no idea how to do this anymore.
Here,
you showed
show
me how to
you.
Do it.
There's a little thing that you push, and this there's a little button here.
Right.
And then a key comes out so you can lock your dashboard, or if it runs out of juice and you don't have
it
the batteries.
It locks your glove compartment.
Yes, but also I'm quite positive this will work on a door
right.
If your remote goes out of battery.
Yeah. I also use it as a hunting knife when I go hunting.
Which is frequently.
Always.
You and Ted Nugent hook up
yeah.
on Saturdays and go hunting together.
Yes. Yes.
Good for you. All right. Well, that's what I'm going to do. There's an auto thing on the dashboard. I'm just figuring out what, you know, would help if I read the manual.
Ah, who's got time?
But there's like this blind spot thing that I can turn on, and on my side view mirror, it beeps. It doesn't beep. It shows a little orange light, and it's on when someone's in my blind spot.
Yeah, that's helpful.
That's totally helpful, but pretty soon there's just going to be like a laser light show, and I'm not going to pay attention to the road.
It's coming. It's going to be next. All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there is more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Did you see... hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder. Did you see that lady who pretended to be a judge got elected and she is now a judge? Isn't that crazy? We talked about her...
Nothing's crazy anymore to me, Bill. Can I tell you that,
no,
honestly?
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. There was a time where you could hear a story and you go, well, that's shocking. That's surprising. I didn't see that coming. But
Ripley's, believe it or not.
In a week that saw the Cubs win the World Series and a reality show star become a president, yeah, can we be surprised by anything anymore?
All right, now what's the whole story? She was posing as a judge.
She was a law clerk, and she was acting as a judge. There was a judge there, but you're not allowed to do that. You
but
can't
the judge
pretend.
Let her do that? Why?
Yeah. I'm not sure why. I guess it was like a trainee program. You know,
that
like,
no one knew about but
you know
the two
how,
of them?
Did you ever go to a Bennigan's and even though you have a waiter...
Waiter in training?
Kyle's next to him, just kind of nodding a lot, you know, going, oh, all right. Then you ask about the appetizer. I get it. Potato skins. I'm there. All right. I get it.
It happens in doctor's offices all the time now.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, because and that's what a great way to train them. But it's funny because they say, oh, I have my student doctor who's going to be escorting me today.
Right.
Do you mind if they come in? They're standing right there. What can, at that point, you don't want to go, no, I don't really care.
I know it's better for the doctor and for medicine itself to have that person there, but...
You don't let them in?
I've been relatively healthy of late, so I haven't had that situation, but I've been there. I remember when my mom got sick, almost every day, whoever the doctor was at the time, had sometimes as many as three yeah. other people with clipboards. So you know they're legit. You can't just go out and buy a clipboard. You got to be real. So she would always agree to it. And I went, yeah, I that's the thing to do. But
why would you say no?
I'm a very private person.
Oh, Bill.
I don't know.
All right. Well, this was kind of, but
now, this is a judge.
All right, Steve, do you know more on the story though? Cause there was this clerk who posed as a judge and was hearing cases, correct? And there really was
Rhonda Crawford is
and there
name.
Was really a judge in the courtroom as well who allowed this to happen. Why did she allow that to happen, Steve?
Steve refuses to answer.
Oh, I see.
Steve is consulting an attorney.
No, he's talking. You don't hear him?
I don't hear him, no. A law clerk who faces charges of impersonating a judge has been elected as a judge in the Chicago area, even though she has been barred from taking the office.
Well, then how does this happen?
I think it happens because even though a lot of people heard the story, we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
Maybe the name didn't resonate. So then when you were filling out your form for who should and shouldn't be a judge...
What's
you
her
just
name?
Didn't
Maybe
know. Rhonda Crawford, did you vote for her?
Oh, no. She was on the list of not recommended.
Yeah, right. Rhonda Crawford.
If you brought that list in with you.
I just kept chanting Crawford, Crawford when I was in there so I'd remember. That's my way of remembering.
So what happens? Is she going to be disbarred? Just when she, it looks like the training program went well if she won.
Right. Could have gone better. Rhonda Crawford had been expected to win Tuesday's election over a write-in opponent, as she was the only name listed on the ballot for Cook County Judicial Sub-Circuit. The 45-year-old can't be sworn in, though, to the $180,000 a year job. That's
wow.
That's a nice starting salary, by the way, isn't it?
That's the wrong business.
Boy, unless she is cleared of all wrongdoing. The former nurse... actual nurse, not just somebody impersonating a nurse, was fired from her courthouse job and criminally charged for donning a black robe and presiding over traffic cases. At least it was just traffic cases.
That's probably why she was able to do it.
It could have been so much worse.
Yeah, but what happens to the judge who let her hear the cases? Because she shouldn't.
That's a good question. All right, so she was putting on a black robe and presiding over traffic cases. That shouldn't have been heard. That should have been heard by a real judge, not somebody who just had a black robe. The Illinois Supreme Court temporarily suspended her law license. Crawford has said that she's been shadowing judges, thus the black robe, observing how they work. When Judge Valerie Turner encouraged her, and that's in quotes, to put on a robe and preside. That's very encouraging.
Yeah, but if she's then going to end up running for judge, then it looks like she was qualified.
I guess, but you have to do more, right?
You need a judge card.
You don't just show up and go, I've got a robe. Why can't I be a judge? I did not pronounce any judgments. I did not tell anyone that I was a judge, although dressing like a judge leads people to believe. And sitting behind the bench.
Okay, but this goes back to your whole clown thing, clowns and people dressed as clowns. This bothered you because this, but now look, judges and those dressed as judges.
Right. Yeah.
Now do you understand
now it? I do. I didn't understand it, but now I'm starting to.
She couldn't be sworn in, but she swore on her way out when she was taken off the ballot.
Right. All right, let's take a break. We've got other things to discuss with you.
Including the visit of Donald Trump to the White House. We're going to talk to someone about that next.
Yep, that's coming up. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Yesterday, during our very show, we had President Barack Obama saying that he had invited Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, to the White House, and that was going to happen today, and it did happen today. And someone who was there, because we couldn't be, ABC News correspondent Karen Travers. How are you, Karen?
I'm great. We wish we could have been a fly on the wall inside.
Oh, yeah.
Meeting, of course. The meeting lasted a little over an hour, and clearly they had a lot to talk about. This is the first time President Obama and Donald Trump actually have met face-to-face, which seemed remarkable to the Washington press corps, because you kind of think all these people are in the same orbit and have run across each other at some point. But no, this is the first time. And there was a lot of nasty, nasty rhetoric on the campaign trail. President Obama has called Donald Trump uniquely unqualified to be president. And Donald Trump, of course, has called President Obama a phony, a liar, the worst president in history. But he was all smiles, and it was a cordial photo op after the meeting, and they say both of them are focused on a smooth transition and trying to make sure that the Obama's going out and the Trump's coming in, that things still keep functioning. And, you know, I thought there was something really humble from Donald Trump, saying that he looks forward to dealing with the president in the future, including counsel, acknowledging that maybe he could get some advice from the guy who's been sitting in that Oval Office for the past 8 years, because it's a really tough job.
Karen, was there even a tinge, even the slightest little tinge of some uncomfortableness or uncomfortability on either of them? Could you sense any of that at all?
Not that you could really sense. And the White House afterwards, the press secretary went, I thought, to great lengths to say that it wasn't as awkward as everybody might have expected. Now, did they resolve all their differences? Of course not. And the press secretary, in fact, when asked if the president still stands by the wholly unqualified comments, he said, yes, we're going to, that is what he has said, sticking to it. But I think that there was a sense that from watching this, that President Obama is trying to set a tone. It started yesterday with his comments in the Rose Garden. He knows his team is disappointed. He knows his party is disappointed. But he wants to set that tone of how to approach this. And as the phrase goes, elections have consequences. And now the Republicans control the White House, the House, and the Senate, and Democrats need to move forward from that. And I think President Obama is trying to tell everybody in his party, we got to get to work. You can be upset, but now you got to move on.
And I'm feeling hopeful, because that's all I have left in me to feel. But I am feeling hopeful, especially, Karen, when you said that Donald Trump had said, you know, that I will look to the president for help. He said something in his acceptance speech that I will look to other people for help if I need it. That's not a Donald Trump I have heard before.
No, the tone has been very strikingly different since he was declared the president-elect. And, you know, I think there's this unique aspect of what these two men now share. Campaigns are ugly and nasty, but now it's all about governing. And Donald Trump, when he takes the oath of office, will be the 45th president. It's a small group. It's a pretty exclusive club. And I think that was his recognition today, that there is great responsibility when you step into the Oval Office for the first time. And there are very heavy decisions that will be put on your desk. And you can run the biggest company in the world, but this is a different ballgame. And I thought perhaps maybe he was struck by that today. And President Obama has talked about how wonderful the team was when he came in. Obviously, they didn't agree on things either. And back then, Senator Obama slammed President Bush on the campaign trail. And yet the transition was smooth, because ultimately they realized that the guy coming in to take over that spot is going to have a big, heavy load waiting for him.
Karen, a couple of weeks ago, somebody said something that I hadn't really thought about, even though we've had a lot of exposure to Donald Trump, which is you don't see him smile. He just doesn't seem to have it in him to smile. Was he smiling at all today?
Very serious, actually. That's an interesting note. I thought in the Oval Office, I thought his speech the other night, or I guess it was yesterday morning, 3 a.m. after, was much more somber than we've seen him before.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that's going to be a fascinating thing to watch. Campaigning is very different than governing. That seems pretty obvious, right? But when you're out on the campaign trail, I spent the last week and a half with Donald Trump before Election Day, and he's going into these rallies with 10, 15, 20,000 people chanting his name, the adoration that you're getting from the crowd. That's intoxicating. That's
sure.
A really exciting thing for a candidate, especially one who's never been in politics before. I mean, to have your first run for office be that level,
yeah.
Most people are, you know, city council or the local something or other. Then all of a sudden, the brakes stop, and you get to the White House after Inauguration Day, and you'll give speeches, and you'll do photo ops and meet world leaders. But you're not doing that before 10,000 screaming fans. And I think there's a fascinating thing then to see how Donald Trump adjusts to that over the first couple months in office, and how different his tone is. He doesn't have the rowdy, raucous crowd in front of him.
Were the two men ever alone, or were there always other politicos with them as they were taking this little tour of the White House?
They wouldn't leave them alone together. Are you kidding?
No, that'd be trouble.
No, they did. They had some time, just the two of them, according to Josh Earnest, the press secretary, because everybody was trying to pump him for information on what happened. But he said they did have some time for the two of them just to talk. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. And I think to potentially limit any risk of it getting out there, that's probably the best way to do it. And then, you know, another meeting that was taking place here on White House grounds was First Lady Michelle Obama meeting with Melania Trump. And that's another just fascinating thing to look at, giving her a tour of the residence where she will be moving into. And we know from 8 years ago how Michelle Obama said that then First Lady Laura Bush was very, very kind and helpful to her.
Yeah.
And you can expect that that would be the same process now.
Yeah, you'd almost have to be, right? Although there's that weird thing when you give your house, when you're selling your house to somebody and you go, this room's kind of drafty, make sure this window's closed at night. There's got to be little elements of that, right?
Right, I'm sure. And you know, the little things of, you know, they both have children, and that's a unique thing to move into the White House with kids. And where will Barron Trump go to school? And what are the things that they should keep an eye on? But, you know, one thing I really loved 8 years ago was the letter that Barbara and Jenna Bush, who were older, they were out of college at that point, but the letter that they sent to the Obama girls when they moved in was really cool. And they were obviously daughters and granddaughters of a president, so they had a lot of White House experience.
Yeah.
And it gave them all the little tricks and nooks and crannies that we get to see of, you know, slide down this banister because it's the most fun and do this and get ice cream at midnight. And there's another part of the White House that I think people forget about. There's the politics, there's the policy, but this is historic. It's the people's house, and the Obamas have enjoyed their 8 years here, and they're going to want the Trumps to move in and make that as seamless as possible.
Will they get their security deposit back?
Depends on how many, what is like the little putty things you use to stick posters on the wall in college.
Right.
If they can get all those down and cleaned up, yes.
Good.
And
that's
wasn't
good.
There some report that somebody in the Clinton administration, when Bill was leaving the White House, took all the some letters off the keyboards
the
and
W's.
Yes.
Yeah.
The W's off
oh,
the keyboard.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, that's
yeah,
the reason.
Of course, right? The W's for the George W. Bush. That was certainly the legend out there at the time. And there might have been some not good feelings between the outgoing team and the incoming team. But certainly 8 years later, we didn't see anything like that.
Good. That's
and Barack
good
Obama's not going to do anything like that to the
right
to Trump's.
Right. Right.
Well, and you know, the other kind of fun point is that President Obama will move out of the White House on January 20th. The bags are packed. They'll be out of there that morning. And then he's staying in D.C. as of right now because mm-hmm. they're going to stay here while Sasha goes and finishes high school. So he's not heading back out to your neck of the woods just yet. But that's going to be incredible to have a current president living in the White House and the former president, I mean, literally 2 miles up the road
right
at the house that they're going to rent.
They'll
I don't know
probably,
if there's enough room in this town for two presidents.
They'll probably run into each other at Panera every once in a while, don't you think?
Yeah, get coffee at the Starbucks in DuPont Circle.
Right.
Halfway between their houses.
Won't it be a drag when President Obama can't golf because the real president is
oh,
reserved
yeah
the course?
Yeah, he gets right away.
I mean, you kind of can't get the course held up for you when you're no longer the president. He's going to have to wait in line behind the slow foursome in front of him going
that's no
forward.
Good. No good.
That's not going to be a happy moment.
Karen, we appreciate it.
What do you mean I can't motorcade and cross the line on the course?
Thanks so much. We know it was a big day, and we appreciate your reporting on it for us.
Yeah,
thanks.
All the action's back in Washington now.
Yep. Karen Travers, everybody from ABC News.
Thank you,
keeping
Karen
us up to date. A little bit of a break. Steve has the news. And then Paul Liznick, who is a political analyst over at WGN-TV, joins us to talk about some of the transitioning. So stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Lovely job.
You nailed it, Steve.
Well, thank you.
Today has flown by for some reason.
Very fast day.
We're about a couple minutes away from talking to WGN-TV political analyst, attorney Paul Liznick.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on Facebook really missing everybody's pictures of food and their pets.
Right.
And I hope it comes back soon.
It's like landmines on Facebook now. Like, wherever you walk, you got to be very careful. It's very dangerous on Facebook the last couple of weeks.
But see, it's over. Why does it have to keep going? That's just my question.
Because it's still, it's even though it's over,
fresh.
It's still, yeah,
it's
it
open.
Hasn't set in really. Not really. Has it?
No, I mean, there's a winning side and a losing side. And if your candidate won and you're happy about it, awesome. And if your candidate that you voted for didn't win, we all are in this together. So I just feel like the venom should stop now.
Sure.
Gina Tedesco is a news person who's been on the air in Chicago for years.
Yeah.
She had posted something that she didn't vote for Trump, but she put, "I take comfort recalling Joe Biden's statement that everyone who becomes president has an epiphany that leads him to a new him or horror, to a new, deeper understanding of all sides of the country's issues, leading to a more realistic approach to handling them. So that makes me feel better.
So I guess there's something in the fact that even though you know, if you're Donald Trump at this point, you go, well, I've won it. But then once you're walking through the White House and the realization sets in that he's got to move to a smaller residence.
Then he goes, oh, I won it.
Right. What happened?
Where am I going to put the pictures?
Right.
But really, I mean, just imagine walking into the White House and knowing that in, you know, 30 days or 40, 70 days, what is it that... you're going to be moving
That's
into
wild.
That. It just is an amazing thing. I just can't imagine it. Well, I do imagine it several times. But, you know, it's like,
someday, Steve.
But that probably, if you're charting it and going, when does the moment hit you that you go, this is real. This isn't a dream anymore. This happened and it's going to happen. I bet it is then. I bet it's when you pull up and you go, I'm not on a tour of the White House. They're not just showing me the, you know, the back of it, the safe part of it. They're showing me where I'm going to live and operate from. I bet that's where you go, okay, this is as real gets.
Does the furniture stay? Do you get a new mattress? I don't want to lay where some other president has been.
You call dial a mattress probably that first day and you go, I need
leave off the last S for savings.
Right. I need a king size for my wife and I and a baron size for the boy. If you deliver those out right away.
And when we spoke to Karen Travis from ABC a while ago, saying that they were together alone for a minute and they were meeting up and it didn't seem awkward. I'm sure it was, but come on, you think about the trash talk that goes on when you're in a competition, you know, when you're in Little League. I mean, there is some of that.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that, you know, some of that trash talk that was going on both sides, it's over now. The contest has been won.
Right. And I don't think, there's no evidence that I've ever seen that these guys like each other. However, as Karen Travers mentioned, it's such an elite group of people who have been or are about to be the president that nobody else has that feeling in their head. So if you're ever gonna compare that feelings with those feelings with anybody, it's got to be somebody else who's either done it or about to do it.
And you know what else is interesting? For as much as they dislike each other, or are so hard on each other publicly, they'd never met.
Right? How about that?
That surprised me that they. I mean, I guess where would they have? But well, feel like they would have come across each other somewhere,
right?
None of those correspondence dinners, wouldn't it
make
sense?
Well, I mean, they were together there because that's what many people think, that's what prompted Donald Trump to run.
Right.
You remember? Obama
right,
just skewered him.
Yeah.
And he didn't laugh. He just sat there.
Yeah, that's right.
So those nights, they were
they
in the same
meet?
Room, but I guess they didn't actually physically meet.
Right.
I'm surprised Barack didn't go up and go, hey, just thought I should shake your hand.
Yeah.
That's weird. Paul Lisnick is here, WGN-TV political analyst. How are you, Paul?
I'm great. I have been following the papers. Anything happened lately?
Nothing. Empty
you know,
week.
We brought this up earlier, and you know, I didn't vote for Trump, and yet I'm hopeful. I have hope is my middle name now that Trump does a good job as president because we're all in this together. But I guess what hurts me so much is that the popular vote and the electoral college vote were completely skewed. The last time this happened was with Al Gore and George Bush.
Right. Yeah.
So,
but put another way, Wendy, that's two times in 16 years that a candidate, in this both these cases, the Democrat, got more votes than the other side, but didn't become president.
Which just got us to talking. I know there was a reason the Electoral College was put together. Can you explain some of that?
Yeah. So the reason we even have it, I mean, it's in the Constitution, and you're going back to days when remember, this was pre-internet. So you're going back to the days when small states didn't have a voice. There was a concern that candidates would spend no time in the smaller states and that they wouldn't have a voice equal to others. Plus, this was also a respect, if you will, for slave states, because in the slave states at the time, you had lots of people, but slaves couldn't vote.
Right.
And so the creation of the Electoral College was a way of looking at population and giving a voice to a group of people who couldn't vote through the people who could. And that was seen to be a way to balance things out. That's where it came from. It has actually no sort of present purpose for being around anymore. But good luck trying to get a constitutional amendment to be passed.
Why is that? Who would fight? I mean, is it obvious?
No, it's not about fighting it. It's the mechanism. It takes years and years and years. I mean, it's about, it's got to go to every state. There has to be, I mean, just the mechanism for getting a constitutional amendment to pass.
And why didn't Al Gore start that 16 years ago?
It actually does come up from time to time. The issue with constitutional amendments in general, they tend to be changes that lean in the progressive direction.
Yeah.
And it's really tough once you get a government in place and to get any movement on that, because the Constitution is not a progressive document. It just gets sometimes interpreted progressively by a Supreme Court that is progressively leaning.
Yeah.
And that may change in the coming years.
All right.
As well.
So, Paul, that said, could there be a compromise and you could have an electoral community college?
Well, the problem is any kind of, I mean, there's no compromise without changing the Constitution. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
And I mean, what you were talking about there, Bill, would be how do we, you know, in what way do we want to modify the Constitution? What kind of system do we want? But I mean, to me, with technology and where we are today, truly what you need is the popular vote wins, whoever that popular vote goes to.
Wouldn't you think? Doesn't that make more sense?
It does today, but in the complexities of the late 1700s, early 1800s, they couldn't do what we could do today.
And I'm being truthful with you. Had the election gone the exact opposite, had Hillary Clinton won the Electoral College and Donald Trump won the popular vote, I would still say it doesn't seem to make sense. One vote should equal one vote.
Well, interestingly, I thought you were going to go somewhere else with that comment, which was Donald Trump said that he would only accept the results of the election if he won.
Yeah.
Now, there's a bit of humor in that, but his point was, it has to be fair. So what the question it does raise, and before I say that, remember the night of the election as we were on air here at WGN-TV, and John Podesta took the podium and said, look, folks, every vote's got to be counted. You're not going to see Secretary Clinton tonight. Go home. We'll talk to you in the morning. And I looked at Mark Sapelsa, Micah Mater, and went, huh, is this actually the Democrats who aren't going to accept the results? Is that where this is headed? Mm-hmm. By morning, the answer was no. But my point is, if Donald Trump had won the popular vote but lost the Electoral College, would he have graciously conceded the next morning? I'm not saying yes or
I'm
no,
wondering.
But I'm just saying if either of them was going to create the problem, it might just have been Trump.
Right.
But how come just two times in all these election years it's not been even? And how does somebody become an electorate? Because does it matter if they're Republican or Democrat? And does it matter now that the House and the Senate are both Republican? Will Republicans always win the electoral vote, or that has nothing to do with anything?
No, it's got nothing to do with it. I mean, the number of electoral votes have to do with congressional districts. So if a change is going to come into play, it's not so much about that as it is the way the political process plays out in redistricting. And sort of in that direction. There was a delegate, I'm drawing a blank on where he was from, but there was an electoral delegate who didn't like Hillary Clinton and sort of made a public announcement
that he wasn't going to go with
what his state.
He wasn't
going to vote for Hillary Clinton, no matter what his state did, whatever. And the truth is, there's no law that says they have to. One would just think if you represent your state, maybe you should do what your state did. Doesn't sound wrong to me.
Paul, are the numbers fixed? For instance, if one state has a huge fluctuation in population, let's say they lose 100,000 people, they gain 100,000 people, does their electoral college vote change at all?
Well, what could happen is the number of districts can change, and then that would influence the number of electoral votes.
I see. When you were a kid, there was a game we used to play, a Parker Brothers game called Landslide. Did you ever play that game?
You know, I played a lot of games, but I don't remember.
You don't remember Landslide?
No.
It kind of was a game based on you were running for president, and you had to state-by-state win the electoral votes, and I wish so badly
was
I still
rigged?
Had it. It was rigged. The game was rigged. Just like Clue and Masterpiece.
And I'm not starting a conspiracy theory, but, you know, Donald Trump was all saying everything's rigged. That was beforehand, which
kind of... Oh, nothing was rigged now.
But it's so weird how all the polls were so wrong, and then there were rumors, you know, be careful because who knows who's going to hack into the voting systems on Election Day in the United States. It's weird how everything went the wrong way. Do you accredit that to people who maybe didn't want to admit that they were going to vote for Trump and came out and did it at the end?
Yeah, I think there's a few things to say. First of all, while polls were wrong, one got it right, and it was the LA Times poll. And what LA Times did that was different from pretty much everybody else was that they had a pool of respondents, about 3,000 people big, and they used that same pool throughout the course of the election, meaning every time they issued a new poll, they didn't randomly call a new group of 500 people. They called the same groups within that 3,000 base that they had. And that base was crafted so that it represented certain, you know, elements of an African-American from downtown L.A., that kind of thing. And so what you were getting was sort of a consistency in representing, getting a representation of California as they would do those polls. And when they issued their final poll, Trump won. And what I know is Clarence Page was on our set from the Chicago Tribune, was on our set on election night. He said he knows the guy that wrote the report, you know, the article about that study. And he said to Clarence, he goes, I have no idea. How am I even writing a report that says Trump's going to win? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, but it was the one accurate thing, and it may have been because it was done. So the answer, Wendy, to your question is, you know, there probably was clear errors in the polling, with the exception pollsters would say, well, wait a minute, we all said she would win, and she did win the popular vote. We weren't that off. Maybe they need to modify how things get looked at state by state so that you're getting a reflection of the way the Electoral College is going to vote and not necessarily just the way people are going to vote.
Yeah.
So the credibility of pollsters on the whole, would you say, has been tarnished? Like in future elections, will they take this into account that they were, other than the LA Times, they were so dramatically wrong for the most part? Will this change the way they go about doing their business?
Well, you know, they've been wrong before. I mean, I have this sense in the last couple of elections, we're always talking about how polls got it wrong.
Yeah.
And but I don't think that, you know, they try and get better. I mean, listen, we ought to do what the campaigns do, because the sophisticated methods that get used by the campaigns, the you know, the Clinton campaign, the Trump campaign, they actually have much more accurate polling. I mean, for example, Trump goes to Minnesota the night before the election. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said on air, what the heck is he going to Minnesota for? He doesn't have a chance at Minnesota. Now, it ultimately went blue, but that was about a day and a half later. So obviously they had some sense. And Hillary Clinton going to Philadelphia, Raleigh, North Carolina, the Clinton campaign said, oh, we're just doing that. You know, aren't those lovely places to wrap up the campaign?
Sure.
You know, it's going to shore up the vote. And in the end, she lost those locations. My guess is their internal polling showed she was in trouble.
All right. So you said something about like the polls the campaigns did were probably more accurate. So do you think Trump knew early on that he was winning? Because I'd like to think he was completely surprised by this.
No, actually, my understanding is that nobody was more surprised, by the way, getting the nomination than Donald Trump. And even as of about 2 days before the election, the Trump camp had no idea they were going to win this thing. So I think that I don't know. This is, it kind of reminds me of the movie Being There.
Yeah.
You're a big, do you remember that with Peter Sellers?
Yeah. Chauncey Gardner.
Yeah. So, I mean, we can spend an hour sort of explaining it for your listeners, but I just think if people haven't seen the movie Being There with Peter Sellers, go rent it, because you just lived through it.
There are parallels. There's no doubt about it. Paul Liznick is our guest, political analyst for WGN-TV. We have more questions for you, Paul, and there are people on the line that want to talk to you as well. So give us a call or text, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And we're talking with Paul Liznick, WGN-TV political analyst. Paul Liznick was on with Micah Mater and Mark Sapalsa on election night. And
till 2:15 in the morning.
Yeah, it went a little late, didn't it?
It's okay, though, because I had to be on at 4. So, you know what? I just stayed here.
I took a little nap.
No.
Drank a lot of coffee.
No, but this was funny. In the morning, I shouldn't say this. This in the morning, I mean, I was basically on at 4 every half hour, every 20 minutes. And so I did try and take a nap in the director's office. And then I don't know if I fell asleep, but also they're knocking on the door. And I won't say a name, but another guest who was with us, he had fallen asleep at home. So I had to run back on and replace him.
Wow.
So it's a good thing I was here, because everybody else was just falling asleep.
Yep.
It was a long night. All right. We probably only have time for one question. And Robert, go ahead. Paul Liznick.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I just was wondering if it's too far-fetched to think that somehow that electoral vote was can have been hacked, or can have been some type of default in there where it can create this, because it's only happened twice in 16 years. Isn't that some type of abnormality for somebody to actually view this on a more serious note to see what actually happens there?
Well, Robert, the answer is it wouldn't be the electoral vote that is hacked or rigged or any other word you want to use, because the electoral vote turns out to be just a reflection of what the popular vote is. So if there is a problem, then it's along the lines of a problem at the polls and at the voting, and that's a state-by-state question. I will tell you that I had on Bert Odelson, who's an election expert. I had him on my Politics Tonight show, which airs weekly on CLTV at 5:30. There's a plug. And and we talked about that. I said, what are the chances that an election can be rigged? And for the sake of time, I'll simply honestly tell you, he said it's pretty much impossible because voting booths, they're not hooked to the internet. Nobody's hacking into them that way. It's all just an
That's
internal
true.
Thing.
You forget that that's not all online. Robert, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
We're going to have to accept the results of this contest.
But that's what that's what's beautiful about our system, because the next morning, Hillary Clinton gave an eloquent concession speech. Barack Obama gave an eloquent speech saying he welcomed Donald Trump to the White House today as they met. Another eloquent speech from the president, and I'll give Trump points. He spoke nicely about his respect for the president. This is how power needs to transition in our country.
Progress.
His acceptance speech was very presidential and wonderful.
Indeed. I mean, it gives, I think, a lot of people hope. I think what we want to watch next is the appointments he makes, because he can talk that game and, you know, hopefully he will live the rhetoric he's using now. But if he starts to make appointments and you're hearing things like Newt Gingrich as a Secretary of State figure, yeah. Rudy Giuliani as Attorney General. I mean, the question is, if he surrounds himself by people who, if you like those folks, you'll be thrilled. But if you don't like those folks, you're going to be nervous and scared. We'll see how a Trump administration actually performs as opposed to any of the rhetoric.
Scott Baio, Chief of Staff. Do you like the sound of that, Paul?
You know,
I do.
I do like that. Yeah. But I think he would go by Chief Chachi.
Chief Chachi.
I think it'd become Chachi of Staff.
I like the sound
like
of that
it.
More.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great job, Paul Lisnick. You can see him on CLTV. What time are you on?
Well, 5:30. We repeat at 10 o'clock on CLTV. And, of course, our WGN News programs I'll be on later this afternoon talking about the Electoral College.
Awesome. I'm going to leave you with a text that we got. And this makes all the sense in the world to everyone. Get over it already. Trump won, in all caps. Accept it. I am about to stop listening to you. Enough is enough. The hog did not win, thank God.
Yeah.
That's we're all coming together.
That is what coming together is all about. That is the new lyrics for a song called Kumbaya.
Thank
Paul,
you, Paul.
Thank you.
What is that? The hog?
The hog did not win. Oh, okay. Thank God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful. All right. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, guys.
Come on. We got to let the healing begin. But see what I mean? Enough. We know Trump won. I said that. You said that. We've all said that.
Yeah. I get it. It happened.
God.
All right. We'll take a break. Roll will be by. Anna will be by. We'll find out what they've got coming up next. It's Bill Leffen. It's 20th Center on WGN.